Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's Monday night weekly call. Today is Monday, May 18, 2015. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. That's 605-562-3140. Participant code 385-698. That's 385-698. All radio hosts are invited into the queue if they have any questions or a comment. If anybody would like to email a question, which we'll answer next week, they can send their questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Don't forget to please support our business partners. You can find them on the right side of our website, Numana Foods, East End Rare Coins, Collodial Silver Maker, that's with Silver Lung, and Survival Seed Vault. For more information on those products, you can click on our right side, nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support us by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation button top right. All right, let's get started. Tonight we're going to start off looking into Proverbs chapter 6. We're going to look at verses 1 through 15. We'll just read through that, and it's a warning against idleness and falsehood. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Go humble thyself, and make sure thy friend. Keep not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of a fowler. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her way, and be wise. Which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer, and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. A naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a forward mouth. He winketh his eye with his eyes. He speaketh with his feet. He teacheth with his fingers. Forwardness is in his heart. He deviseth mischief continually. He soweth discord. Therefore shall his calamity come suddenly. Suddenly shall he be broken without remedy. Okay, that was Proverbs chapter 6, 1 through 15. Okay, tonight's topic, we're going to be looking at mandamus to the sheriff. Back about, I think it was about 8 weeks ago, we wrote a paper. It was kind of a preliminary paper to the sheriff. And it was a total of 8 pages, I believe. And since then, we now have written this paper that we're going to be filing, as a matter of fact, tomorrow. We refiled the writ of quo warranto this past weekend. We only refiled through faxing, though. Of course, the first time we filed it back in November, we filed it by mail. And this last time, we just did it by fax. But we also faxed it out to about 4,000-plus media sources across the United States. We also faxed to every oath taker in America on the federal level and every state level. So we hit U.S. Congress, both houses. We sent to the FBI special agents in charge in each federal district, the U.S. Marshals, Joint Chief of Staff. We've sent a copy to all 50 governors of the United in each of the United States. We sent copies to both houses in every state of the Union. We sent a copy to every judge in America, both on the federal and state level. And we also sent a copy to all of the courthouses through the clerk throughout America. So we sent out quite a few faxes over the weekend. We finally got that all together, and things are starting to move. tomorrow. We're going to be filing the paper that we're going to be looking at tonight. So tomorrow, sometime before the end of the day, we should have it in the mail. It passes a lot of putting together, so it may take possibly may not get out till the following morning, but it is heading out hopefully tomorrow. So we'll be dating it for tomorrow and trying to get it out before the end of the day. If anybody wants to read along, we're going to look at this paper today, and anybody wants to read along, they can go out to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on media, come down to federal court filings. It's just a little bit down, a few inches. You'll see the writ quo warranto and then the mandamus to the sheriff. The total is 23 pages with two cover pages, which we don't have on it right now, but we'll connect that maybe tomorrow once we do the mailing. We'll put the two cover sheets on, and we'll repost that paper. But right now we got the 23 pages that are being filed. We just finished proofreading this today, and we're going to be adding one more paragraph with maybe three sentences or so. We haven't figured out what those words are going to be yet. But we're going to put that into the beginning, giving somewhat of an introduction, a little bit better of an introduction than what we have at the moment. So, but anyway, again, we're going to, anybody wants to follow along, it's mandamus to sheriff, federal court filings, on underneath the media tab on nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay, writ mandamus to the count, and by the way, this also will be going to the same listings of people we just gave. Every elected individual on the federal and state level in America is getting a copy of this. They will be getting a copy through the fax system. We'll start faxing out. Maybe we'll start faxing out tomorrow. Probably not till Wednesday. We'll start faxing out Wednesday. We'll let this hit the court first. This should hit the court on Wednesday or Thursday, probably Thursday. So we'll start faxing out Wednesday, though. And then next week we'll be filing another paper. We have a series of papers. This is two of seven, and we do have some other papers we're working on. But right now we have two of seven ready to go. This is writ of mandamus to the county sheriff to inform and for immediate action. This series of informations, orders, and writs by we the people filed in the United States Supreme Court United States District Courts, the State Supreme Courts, and served upon our elected and appointed servants, when not acted upon, forms an indictment against the same. We the people are exposing the foundational errors of our judicial system, errors founded on subversion and contempt by law of law by enemies past and present. It is expected that said servants and all recipients understand the subject matter. All servants and recipients have authority under the law, and have taken an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. Today, these servants violate the sacred oath, and now lives have been destroyed, and liberty hangs in the balance. Silence, when you have a duty to speak or act, advocates the present conspiracy to overthrow the government of the United States willfully and knowingly. Warning, do not seek an attorney's interpretation that is not responsible for the oath you took concerning this information. Ignorance of the law or excuse that you were acting under advice of legal counsel will not be accepted, an acceptable excuse, for there is nothing to be interpreted. Okay, first page after that is the table of contents. By the way, like I mentioned before, we have a cover sheet, which is called the File on Demand, and then we have a second page, which lists all of the unified common law grand juries in America, one for each state. So it's a unified, whatever state you're in, unified New York common law grand jury, unified California common law grand jury, and so on. So we list all 50 with the addresses on the second page. To make it clear to them that we're not just a few people in the corner here or in some county or whatever, that we indeed are the people of the United States of America moving across this nation to bring justice back into our courts and therefore back into our political realm also. Second page, right after the notes. And this is where we'll put in another paragraph, maybe three or four sentences, sort of a lead-in paragraph. And so this would be the second paragraph. President Ronald Reagan stressed the importance of the modern sheriff in his address to the National Sheriffs Association on June 21st, 1984. He said, "Thank you for standing up for this nation's dream of personal freedoms under the rules of law. Thank you for standing against those who would transform that dream into a nightmare of wrongdoing and lawlessness. And thank you for your service to our communities, to our country, to your country, and to the cause of law and justice." The county sheriff is a constitutional officer elected by the people, bound by oath as guardians of the people. People's unalienable rights secured by the Constitution. The United States Constitution and its capstone Bill of Rights is the law of the land, and all statutes and state constitutions repugnant to the United States Constitution are null and void. If the sheriff is ignorant to the Constitution, which is common law, it would stand to reason that he is in violation of his oath, not comprehending when judges and politicians violate the common law, and thereby technically guilty of treason. The United States Supreme Court said the sheriff is the chief executive and administrative officer of the county, chosen by popular election. His principal duties are in aid of the criminal and civil courts of record, that's common law courts, such as serving process, summoning juries, executing judgments, holding judicial sales, and the like. He is also the chief conservator of the peace within his territorial jurisdiction. The sheriff is the chief law enforcement officer and highest peace officer of the entire county in which he was elected is to secure the peace and answer to the people alone. Unlike the state police, who are code enforcement officers serving the state and answering to the governor, and city or town or village police, who are also code enforcement officers serving the corporate municipalities and answering to commissioners and or mayors. All have a conflict of interest because they have no constitutional authority or concerns. They cannot serve the code and the Constitution, whereas the sheriff reports directly to the people and not the corporations. The duties, responsibilities, and authorities of the county sheriff as a constitutional officer are at a minimum the same as they were when the state constitutions were originally written. The duties, responsibilities, and authorities of the sheriff cannot be diminished by those in the legislature, court, and state constitutions. When it comes to enforcing the law, that is the U.S. Constitution, the sheriff, being the chief law enforcement officer, answers to no one, not even the governor. Like any other elected official, the sheriff cannot be removed from office by another elected official. He can only be removed by the people at the ballot box, or by an indictment or presentment by a grand jury. Therefore, if a governor would like to remove a sheriff, he would need to ask the people. I know here in New York, the governor has threatened to remove sheriffs, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to write that in there. If sheriffs need to consult a bar judge, bar attorney, or bureaucrat to know when they exceeded their authority, it is no different than consulting with the fox concerning the hen house. If the sheriff cannot ascertain if the government is violating the rights of the people without asking the fox, how can he perform his duty? If a politician, judge, or prosecutor violates the Constitution, it is the duty of the sheriff to call the grand jury and ask the people for an indictment. This is your responsibility. If you seek permission of a prosecutor or a judge on any arrest, you shirk your authority and thereby violate your oath. No politician can come between you and the people, regardless of what you have been taught. It is the duty of the sheriff to seek an indictment, not the prosecutor. Prosecutors call the grand jury when the state has an issue, but the people's business is the sheriff's business. 2. Constitutional officers versus code enforcement officers. The principal challenge to the sheriffs are code enforcement officers. Codes, statutes, that control the behavior of people are repugnant to the Constitution and are therefore null and void. The sheriff has a duty to uphold the Constitution. This poses a dilemma because the sheriff must obey the United States Supreme Court rulings and the United States Constitution in order to uphold his oath. He must first understand it. This is the purpose of this writ. Does the sheriff have the fortitude to keep his oath and uphold the common law? Will he betray his oath and therefore the people who have entrusted him as their constitutional law enforcers? Will he uphold the common law above the will of the bar-driven legislators, judges, prosecutors, and their code enforcement officers? Who are true believers that statutes are above the Constitution? The treasonous bar schools have been teaching codes and statutes as law for more than 50 years. If we fail to correct this error, America will be lost. We are a Republican form of government guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, which means rule by law and in America's case, common law. When an organization like the Bar advocates the overthrow of the Constitution, that is, the common law, they are advocating the overthrow of the government in violation of 18 U.S.C. 2385. When a judge violates the Constitution and the sheriff seeks permission from the prosecutor to seek an indictment, and if the prosecutor refuses to indict and the sheriff submits to the will of the prosecutor, did not the sheriff break his oath and become part of the conspiracy to cover up a crime? Is this sheriff now guilty of felony rescue? When judges break the law, it is the duty of the sheriff to arrest the judge and go directly to the grand jury for an indictment. It is only recently, 50 or so years, that the sheriff has been unlawfully told he must first filter the crime through the bar toward prosecutors, who work for the state and not the people, and almost always refuse to bring the crime before the grand jury when a state official is involved. This is exactly why America is in a constitutional crisis. If we can educate the sheriff, we, the people working with the sheriff, can save America. Another obstacle the sheriff must recognize is the puppet grand jury and trial jurors. Because the jurors are controlled by the foxes, that is, the judges and the prosecutors, the jurors, they are led to deliberate by the all-controlling bar prosecutor. They will first be instructed by the said prosecutor of the statutes they must follow, and thereby trumping the common law. This, of course, is jury tampering, and we will be setting our face against that soon. The dilemma for the sheriff is, what am I to do? The solution is simple. Take the case to the common law grand jury. Clearly you cannot take it to the unlawful puppet jury controlled by the foxes. Lysander Spooner, in Trial by Jury, 1852, said, "Any government that is its own judge and determines authoritatively for the people what are its own powers over the people is an absolute government, of course. It has all the power that it chooses to exercise. There is no other, or at least no more accurate, definition of despotism than this. On the other hand, any people that judge of and determine authoritatively for the government what are their own liberties against the government, of course, retains all their liberties they wish to enjoy. And this is freedom. At least it is freedom to them, because although it may be theoretically imperfect, it nevertheless corresponds to the highest notions of freedom. We, the people, across America, in every state of the Union, are doing exactly that, which we should have been doing all along, since we discovered this truth through the United States Supreme Court decision, whereas in 1992 case U.S. versus William, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, made clear the law when he said, because the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside, we think it clear that as a general matter at least, no such supervisory judicial authority exists, and that the disclosure rule applies here exceeded the Tenth Circuit's authority. Rooted in long centuries of Anglo-Saxon's history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of buffer or referee between the government and the people. The grand jury, although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. Judges, direct involvement in the functioning of the grand jury has generally been confined to the constructive one of calling the grand jurors together and administering their oath of office. This is the authority by which we the people act and come with a determination to put that fox back into its cage and save America. Now you know, and the question before you is, are you going to continue feeding that fox and thereby participate in their treasonous acts against we the people of the United States of America, or will you develop a constitutional backbone through the education and join we the people to bringing law and order back into our courts and thereby our government and save America? Clearly it takes fortitude for a people to step up, take control, and do the right thing for God and country and your posterity. This is your duty. This is the moment in time and history that will define your integrity or your lack thereof. We the people under the United States Common Law Grand Jury, having tolerated your inaction because, like us, we were once ignorant of the truth, we have woken to the hard reality and have decided to do the just thing for ourselves and our posterity. Now you know. Your choices. Step up and do the right thing, or resign and pass this mandamus to your successor, or prepare yourself to face this body in due time for treason. The U.S. Constitution is a common law document, which in turn demands obedience to the common law. Article 4, paragraph of the U.S. Constitution reads, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or the laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. Therefore, when there is a conflict between the law and statutes, the Constitution must prevail, because statutes are not law unless we the people gave the legislators authority to write such law through the Constitution. This is Law 101. It does not get any more difficult than this. See Quo Warranto, filed November 10, 2014. How can a sheriff uphold the Constitution if he was never trained in constitutional law enforcement? We are sure that the sheriff and his deputies were trained in law of statutes and codes, law enforcement techniques and self-defense. It is the sheriff's responsibility to make sure that his deputies know the Constitution so that they can serve the people. When deputies violate the Constitution, even unknowingly, the sheriff is as guilty and as responsible as his deputies. The sheriff is responsible for his entire county, including the court and the jail. If legislators past or present remove the constitutional sheriff's duties and replaced any of these duties by entrusting them to code enforcement officers, we can be sure that the common law, that is, the Constitution, is not being applied in our courts, jails, and our counties. Code enforcement officers serve the government, not the people. If this is the case in your county, notify us, Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and we will start the process to return these duties back under the proper authority of the sheriff. 3. Sheriff's duties in the court. Bailiffs must be sheriff's deputies, trained to understand their duties. They must be approachable by the people in order to report constitutional violations in the courthouse. They must have the fortitude to be able to remove the judge from a bench when the judge violates people's unalienable rights. Unalienable rights are given by God and cannot be trumped by legislators. If there is a conflict between the two, the common law must prevail. The following U.S. court ruling, to offer just a few, should empower you to enforce the law, and the common law grand juries will stand behind you. People versus Skinner. Law of the land, due course of law, and due process of law are synonymous. Marbury versus Madison. All laws, rules, practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Barnett versus Villar. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and the name of the law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since its unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principle follows that it imposes no duties, it confers no rights, it creates no office, it bestows no power or authority on anyone, it affords no protection and justifies no acts performed underneath it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law. Indeed, as insofar as the statute runs counter to the fundamental law of the land, that is, the Constitution, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. Cruden versus Neal. Every man is independent of all laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institution formed by his fellow men without his consent. Mulgrew versus Kansas. Under our system of government, upon the individuality and intelligence of the citizens, the state does not claim to control him or her except as to his or her conduct to others, leaving him or her the sole judge as to all that affects himself or herself. Bennett versus Boggs. Statutes that violate the plain and obvious principles of common law and common reason are null and void. Davis versus Wechsler. The assertion of federal rights, when plainly and reasonably made, is not to be defeated under the name of local practices. And finally, Murdoch versus Pennsylvania. The state may not oppose or charge a charge for the enlightenment, for the enjoyment of a right granted by the federal constitution. 4. Jurisdictions of the courts. Today's courts are de facto, operating contrary to the common law under the rules of chancery and not under the common law. Bailiffs, being the sheriff's deputies, trained to understand their duties, must make sure courts operate according to the law. As we read, U.S. Constitution, Article 4, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made pursuant thereof, and all the treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of the states to the contrary notwithstanding. There are only two courts, we the people, ordained to operate on the said land under the Constitution, called law and equity, as we read. U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties made and which shall be made under their authority. A court of equity. These courts are the jurisdiction where judges hear and decide commercial contract cases and other disputes, whereas there exists only one jurist called the judge, who is bound by aforesaid Article 4, Law of the Land. Equity courts cases can be appealed to our higher court. Courts of law. These courts are the jurisdiction where juries, that is the tribunals, hear and decide all criminal cases and commercial cases and other disputes, if so demanded by one of the parties. All criminal courts are called courts of record, which proceed under the common law. In a trial by jury, the judge is to act as the administrator and can make no rulings. If he does make a ruling, he acts under the color of law, which is a crime under the Constitution. This is called bad behavior, and such a judge should be removed from the bench by the bailiff immediately and brought before grand jury for indictment. The Bill of Rights, Amendment 7, in suits of common law where the value of controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in the courts, any courts of the United States, than according to the rules of common law. U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 1. The judges both of the Supreme and Inferior Court shall hold their office during good behavior. Good behavior, of course, is obeying the Constitution. Bad behavior is not obeying the Constitution. The requirement for a criminal case to proceed are as follows. There must be an injured party, corpus delicti, the body of a crime, the body, material substance, upon which a crime has been committed, e.g., the corpse of a murdered man, the charred remains of a house burned down, in a derivative sense, the substance or foundation of a crime, the substantial fact that a crime has been committed. People versus Dick. For a crime to exist, there must be an injured party. There can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of his exercise of constitutional rights. Scheer versus Cullen. There must be an indictment by an unfettered, not controlled by judge or prosecutor, grand jury. If there is no indictment, a person cannot be held to answer. U.S. Constitution, Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime, that is a crime that requires a prison sentence, unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury. Quoting U.S. versus Williams, the grand jury requires no authorization from its constituting courts to initiate an investigation. And in its day-to-day functioning, the grand jury generally operates without the interference of a presiding judge. It swears in its own witnesses and deliberates in total secrecy. We have insisted that the grand jury remain free to pursue its investigation unhindered by external influences or supervision, so long as it does not trench upon the legitimate right of any witnesses called before it. Recognizing this tradition of independence, we have said that the Fifth Amendment's constitutional guarantee presupposes an investigative body acting independently of either prosecuting attorney or judge. All decisions in a court of record are by a jury alone, called a tribunal, without any interference from a judge. Definition of a court of record is a judicial tribunal having attributes and exercises functions independently of the person of the magistrate designed generally to hold it. That's Jones versus Jones. It proceeds according to the course of the common law. Again, Jones versus Jones. It acts and judicial proceedings are enrolled for or recorded for perpetual memory and testimony. Has the power to fine or imprison for contempt, and it generally possesses a seal. Judicial process. The Bill of Rights, Amendment 5, provides that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, as supported by the following U.S. Supreme Court rulings. Kinley versus Beverly. No man shall be deprived of his property without being held in his own defense. Amendment 5, Davison versus New Orleans. Amendment 5 of the Constitution of the United States provides no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. A similar provision exists in all state constitutions. The phrase two courses of law and the law of the land are sometimes used, but all three of these phrases have the same meaning, and that applies conformity with the ancient and customary laws of the English people, or laws indicated by Parliament. Therefore, no warrant is to be executed by a sheriff without a wet ink signature of a judge, a rubber stamp or a clerk's signature is not sufficient. No legal instrument has executional powers without the signature, and must be accompanied with a sworn affidavit. This includes federal liens and IRS liens. A notice of lien or a notice of levity is not due process according to the Bill of Rights. Bill of Rights, Amendment 4, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supporting by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or thing to be seized. D. Court filings. If a clerk refuses to file any legal document, the clerk commits a crime as per following law, 18 U.S. 2076. Whoever, being a clerk or of a district court of the United States, willfully refuses or neglects to make or forward any report, certificate, statement, or document as required by law shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for not more than 1 year or both. If a clerk, judge, or anyone conceals, removes, or mutilates any documents filed within the court, that person commits a crime, as per the following law, and the sheriff is duty-bound to arrest him. USC, subsection 2071, concealment, removal, or mutilation generally. Whoever willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, or destroys, or attempts to do so, or with the intent to do so, takes and carries away any record, proceeding, map, book, papers, documents, or any other thing filed or deposited with the clerk or officer of any court of the United States, or in any public office, or with any judicial or public officer of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. Whoever having been custody of any such record, proceeding, map, book, document, paper, or any other thing willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, falsifies, or destroys the same, shall be fined under this title for not more than 3 years or both, and shall forfeit his office and be disqualified from holding any office under the United States as used in this subdivision. The term office does not include the office held by any person as a retired officer of the Armed Forces of the United States. Rights to counsel by non-bar members. Often in criminal courts, when people desire to speak for themselves or have assistance of counsel that are not bar members, judges reject and resist any move in that direction. Judges continue to force bar lawyers that were taught in their bar schools to never bring common law into the courts. If they do, the bar judge and or bar prosecutor would report them, and they would lose their bar license and be barred from the court. If the victim continues to resist, the judge may incarcerate the victim for contempt or order competency test and then force a bar attorney on their victim. Sheriffs and deputies fail to realize that the judge is violating their victim's unalienable rights protected by the Sixth Amendment if the sheriff does nothing, he is compliant to conspiracy. Bill of Rights, Amendment 6, right to have assistance of counsel. Schwad versus Board of Examiners. The practice of law cannot be licensed by any state. Sims versus Ahearns. The practice of law is an occupational of common right. Brotherhood versus Virginia. Litigants can be assisted by unlicensed laymen during judicial proceedings. F. America runs on fiction of law. All attorneys and judges are bar taught. The court operates under the rules of chancery and not the rules of common law. Our founding fathers rejected chancery and did not include it in the Constitution. It is in direct conflict with the common law. Whereas we read, U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity rising under this Constitution. Therefore, most of our courts are running on fiction and not law. Fiction of law, something known to be false, is assumed to be true. Ryan versus Motor Credit Company. That statute which would deprive a citizen of the right of a person of property without a regular trial, according to the course and usage of common law, would not be the law of the land. Hoke versus Henderson. Our elected servants are out of control, and America is operating under fiction of law. It is the duty of the sheriff, working with the people, if necessary, to protect the unalienable rights of the people by simply enforcing the aforesaid laws, and only then will America run on law again. Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. Sheriffs took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. But if they don't know the Constitution, how can they uphold and defend it? Sheriffs need to learn the common law and teach it to their deputies or resign their position. G. Only the people can save America. And it is the sheriff's duty to lawfully protect and serve the people. Only when we, the people, rise up to stand against tyrants in our government will we be able to return to our former state of under common law. And in order to accomplish that, all of us must first be educated in the law. This has been the challenge of this body. We are a national movement, and with the presence in every state, with the desire of returning justice back into our courts, and this is now your challenge, if we are going to save America or lose it to fascism. Thomas Jefferson said, educate and inform the whole mass of people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. He went on to say, "I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves, and if we think them not enlightened, though to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true correctiveness of abuses of constitutional power. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all citizens." Thomas Jefferson. H. Power of the Grand Jury. In the stunning 6-3 decision, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that the American grand jury is neither part of the judicial or executive nor legislative branches of government, but instead belongs to the people. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government, governed and administered to directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights, United States versus Williams. Justice Anton Scalia went on to say, "The grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. The whole theory is that its function is that it belongs to no branch or institutional government, serving as a kind of buffer or referee between the government and the people. The common law of the Fifth Amendment demands a traditional functioning grand jury. It is, in effect, a fourth branch." As I'm reading through this, I'm seeing that we have a couple of places where we repeated ourselves, so we're going to pull those repeats out and make it flow a little better, but in any event. And it is under that authority that the preamble of the Declaration of Independence, being the sureties of the peace, that we act, whereas we read. And this is the preamble, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter it, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. The government of the United States belong to we the people, and not these tyrants that fleece us daily in our own courts, of which they have seized control of. Habeas corpus, the great writ of liberty. In the early days, habeas corpus was not connected with the idea of liberty. It was a useful device in a struggle for control between common law and equity courts. By the middle of the 15th century, the issue of habeas corpus, together with privileges, was a well-established way to remove a cause from an inferior court, where the defendant could show some special connection with one of the central courts, which entitled him to have his case tried there. In the early 17th century, the Five Knights case involved the clash between Stuart claims of prerogative and the common law, and was, in the words of one of the judges, "the greatest cause that I have never ever knew in this court." Over the centuries, the writ became a valuable bulwark between the powers of government and the rights of the people in both England and the United States. In the United States, habeas corpus exists in two forms, common law and statutory. The Constitution for the United States of America acknowledges the people's right to the common law of England as it was in 1789. What is the common law? It does not consist of absolute fixed or inflexible rules, but broad and comprehensive principles based on justice, reason, and common sense. The Constitution for the United States mandates that the judicial powers shall extend in all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties made, or which shall be made under that authority. Habeas corpus is the case in law, i.e., proceeding according to the common law in a court of record. Therefore, it is the grand jury as arbiter that shall be enforcer of the law, whereas we read, "If any of our civil servants shall have transgressed against any of the people in any respect, and they shall ask us to cause that error to be amended without delay, or shall have broken some one of the articles of peace or security, and their transgression shall have been shown to four jurors of the aforementioned 25, and if those four jurors are unable to settle the transgression, they shall come to the 25, showing to the grand jury the error which shall be enforced by the law of the land. Magna Carta, June 15, 1215 A.D. Article 4, Section 4 guarantees a republican form of government against domestic violence when a judge enforces acts beyond his authority under the color of law. Judicial immunity is lost. It is nothing less than lawless violence. Likewise, legislative jurisdiction that is not authorized by the United States Constitution is inoperative as though it had never been passed, and judges proceeding without jurisdiction are indictable for treason. Judges are expected to know the law. No state can deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without that due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction equal protection of the laws. Any court that ignores due process is not a common law court. Such an action proves a court unlawful and consequently has no legal authority over the petitioner without his consent. Confirmatio sitiorum. Sovereign people shall not be taken or imprisoned or deceased or outlawed or exiled or anywise destroyed but by lawful judgment of his peers or by the law of the land. Magna Carta, Chapter 39. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Due course of law, this phrase is synonymous with due process of law or law of the land. This means law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice, that is, courts of record. Kansas versus Dunmire. Some have argued that the people have relinquished sovereignty through various contractual devices in which rights were not expressly reserved. However, that cannot be held, that cannot hold, because rights are unalienable. The people retain all rights of sovereignty at all times. The exercise of sovereignty by the people is further clarified when one considers that the constitutional government agencies have no genuine sovereign power of their own, but must rely upon such authority as is granted by the people. In the 1930s in New York, the judiciary and the bar pressed for a constitutional convention, endeavoring to eliminate the unalienable right of habeas corpus, among other issues. The people were so concerned about the attack on their liberties that instead of abolishing habeas corpus, the people wrote in an approval and approved overwhelmingly subsection 4, the privilege of a writ of order of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. Amended by the Constitutional Convention in 1939, approved by a vote of the people November 8, 1938. When our founders debated the Constitution, they included habeas corpus as a remedy against evil. As we read in the Federalist Papers, number 83 and 84, Hamilton to the people of the state of New York, the trial by jury is in criminal cases aided by the Habeas Corpus Act seems therefore to be alone concerned in the question, and both of these are provided for in the most ample manner in the plan of this convention. The creation of crimes after the commission of the fact, or in other words, the subjecting of men to punishment for things they were when they were done, were breaches of no law, and the practice of arbitrary imprisonment have been in the ages the favorite and most formidable instruments of tyranny. The observations of the judicious Blackstone in reference to the latter are well worthy of recital. To bereave a man of life, you say, by violence to confiscate his estate without accusation or trial would be so gross and notorious an act of despotism as must at once convey the alarm of tyranny throughout the whole nation. But confinement of a person by secretly hurrying him to a jail where his sufferings are unknown or forgotten is a less public or less striking and therefore more dangerous engine of arbitrary government. And as a remedy for this fatal evil, he is everywhere particularly empathical in his economics on the Habeas Corpus Act, which in one place he calls the bulwark of the British Constitution. Thus we read Article 1, Section 9, Paragraph 2, the privileges of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. And that was Hamilton. Title 28 of the United States Code acknowledges that it is not the responsibility of the petitioner to know by what claim or authority the state acts, but that the petitioner may inquire as to the cause of the restraint by habeas corpus, 28 U.S.C. 2243. A court, justice, or judge, tribunal, entertaining an application for a writ of habeas corpus shall forthwith award the writ or issue an order directing the respondent to show cause why the writ should not be granted. When the persons holding the prisoners neglect to answer said habeas corpus, when the Federal Rules of Civil Procedures, Rules 55, activates and the prisoner must be released under the entry of default, whereas we read, when a party against whom a judgment for affirmative action is sought has failed to plead or otherwise defend as provided by these rules, and that the fact is made to appear by affidavit or otherwise under seal, the court shall enter the party's default. 18 U.S.C. 2071. Habeas corpus is a judicial process not open for debate. If the prisoner is not released, the party that continues to restrain the prisoner would be guilty of false imprisonment and kidnapping. The arrest of said perpetrators is the appropriate action by the sheriff, and the said perpetrators ought to be brought before a grand jury for potential indictment. 5. Sheriff's duty in the jail. The sheriff is responsible for a lawful implementation of the county correctional facilities and is therefore liable for any unlawful detention. Simply stated, an unlawful detention would be anyone held without a presentment or an indictment by a grand jury, unless, of course, for a violent act being held for an indictment of a grand jury, and then brought before a court of law to answer. This is the people's unalienable rights protected by the Fifth Amendment. We read in the Leper versus Texas, law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice is the due process. Dartmouth College versus Wheat, by the law of the land is more clearly intended the general law, a law which hears before it condemns, which proceeds upon inquiry and renders judgment only after trial. And again, the Fifth Amendment, no person shall be held to answer for a crime unless under a presentment or an indictment by a grand jury, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process. All federal and state courts are courts of record. If declared in a state constitution, county courts are courts of record and proceed according to the common law. All city and town, villages, and courts are not courts of record and proceed according to statutes and are not constitutional, thereby violating due process and therefore do not have the authority to fine or incarcerate. There are a few exceptions wherein New York City courts, as per the New York State Constitution, are courts of record and therefore ought to proceed according to the common law. We read courts of record and courts not of record, the former being those whose acts and judicial proceedings are enrolled or recorded for perpetual memorial and testimony, and which have the power to fine or imprison for contempt. Error lies in their judgment, and they generally possess a seal. Courts not of record are those of inferior dignity, which have no power to fine or imprison, and in which the proceedings are not enrolled in a court of record. Shernock versus Beaumont. The decision of a superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeal. The decisions of an inferior court are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resorting to appeal to the appellate court. Decisions of a court of record may not be appealed. It is binding on all of the courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be appellate or Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgments of a court of record. And by the way, a court of record is one that has a trial by jury. The judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as inclusive on all in this court as it is on other courts. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. Ex parte versus Williams, and that's a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. It is imperative that sheriffs know the difference between courts of record and courts not of record, because courts not of record cannot incarcerate. And if a sheriff incarcerates someone held or tried in a court not of record, that sheriff participates in a crime by violating the person's unalienable right of due process protected under the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. We realize this is a major problem considering that county jails are filled with people tried in courts not of record. Some of these people may be guilty of a crime, and we the people, through the grand and trial juries, will endeavor to solve these problems as soon as we are able to access the courts. Nevertheless, sheriffs cannot continue to receive prisoners that were tried in the courts not of record. If a sheriff believes that some of the accused are guilty of a crime, he will need to bring the issue before a grand jury for an indictment to be tried in a court of record. The following U.S. Supreme Court rulings, being common law, proves our point. And I'm not going to read them all. There are quite a few of them. It's 2 pages of them. And people can read them themselves, but it goes to the right of travel, right of locomotion, claim of exercising constitutional right, and so on. So I'm not going to read those 2 pages, but people can read them. Sheriff's duty in the county. The sheriff, being the chief executive, administrative chief law enforcement officer, and highest peace officer of the entire county in which he was elected, has the absolute authority to arrest even the governor or a judge and then call the grand jury directly for an indictment. A sheriff needs not get permission from the district attorney. The sheriff also has the authority and the duty to secure liberty and the peace within the county, and if necessary, call posse comitatus to assist. The challenges to the sheriff today is from forces within our federal government that is unlawfully moving forward to martial law, and in order to disarm the American people. The only purpose for martial law is to control a captured population. We the people have not given the authority to the 3 branches of government to declare martial law. To have done so would be self-destruction. Any attempt by Congress or executive to use military force, foreign or domestic, against the people to bring them under martial law is an act of treason, war against the people, and we the people will be dependent upon the sheriff within our counties to secure the peace by any means necessary, seeing that Congress has been negligent in providing for the militia. Therefore, in times of emergency, the only constitutional authority to keep the peace during an invasion is posse comitatus, under the Second Amendment, whereas the sheriff is to call upon we the people of the counties to secure the peace. Federal agents and foreign troops or states on state soil would be repugnant to our Constitution and an act of war. Posse comitatus. The power of forces of the country, of the county, the entire population of a county above the age of 15, which a sheriff may summons to his assistance in certain cases, as to aid him in keeping the peace, in pursuing and arresting felons, etc. That's Com versus Martin. The Bill of Rights, Second Amendment states, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state shall not be infringed. U.S. Constitution, Section 8, Paragraph 16, to provides for the organizing, arming, and disciplining of the militia, and for the governing of such parts of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointments of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. 7. U.S. Marshal. The power, authority, and the duty of the U.S. Marshal is similar to that of the county sheriff, in that he is a constitutional officer having the power and the authority to arrest judges and violate the unalienable rights of the people. One marshal is appointed for each of the 94 federal districts by the presidents. The marshal's powers are defined by constitutional authority under the Judiciary Act of 1789. He serves for a term of 4 years, takes an oath of office, has the power to appoint deputies, and shall produce a bond. His duties, like the sheriff's, are... Somebody's bleeding through there. I'm going to have to... Everybody should be muting themselves so we don't hear anything... being bled through here. Let's see where I'm at. His duties, like the sheriff, are to attend the district and circuit courts, execute throughout the districts all lawful precepts directed to him, deliver writs, summons, jurors, secure an impartial trial, execute warrants, and is responsible for retaining, delivering, and transporting prisoners in his custody as directed by the courts. Once a marshal is appointed, he can only be removed from office by the people. That is the grand jury for bad behavior. Marbury versus Madison. The power of appointing the person nominated are political powers to be exercised by the president according to his discretion. When he has made an appointment, he has exercised his whole power, and his discretion has been completely applied to the case. The appointment cannot be annihilated, and consequently, if the officer is by law not removable at the will of the president, the right he has acquired are protected by the law. Marbury versus Madison. So the president can appoint the sheriff, but he cannot unappoint him. He can't remove him from office. Nobody can remove a marshal from office except the people. And that's true also with judges. Judges can be removed because they're appointed by the president also under the same authorities. But only the people can remove them if they were appointed. Most judges on the state levels anywhere are elected. Marshals take an oath of office swearing to faithfully exercise all lawful precepts. Thereby he must execute all the laws, lawful orders of the court. Marshals are constitutional judicial officers and therefore, like the sheriff, are to execute only the law of the land and protect the people's due process. Failure to do so puts them in bad behavior and therefore they can be removed from office by the people. That's the grand jury. When federal SWAT teams in the middle of the night knock down doors, terrifying families and sometimes killing people, even children and pets, because of a federal lien or because they are a Liberty Group member interested in reinstating the Constitution and thereby a threat to some federal agency that is breaking the law, it is the marshal's duty to prevent such Gestapo abuse of powers. For the marshal to allow this abuse is felony rescue, and the sheriff is now duty-bound to arrest all parties involved. The common law grand jury is on high alert concerning such abuses and will be seeking indictments across the nation. Marshall, matter of fact, we had a case recently where a federal agent broke the law. We've discussed this in the past, and by giving a gun to a felon, and the sheriff is looking to arrest him last we spoke with him or heard from him. Marshals, did I read this? I don't think I read this. Marshals, like sheriffs, are the guardians of the Constitution, thereby duty-bound to protect the due process of anyone standing before the court, as much as they are bound to execute all the laws and orders of the court. Due process requires a presentment or an indictment of an impartial grand jury for all criminal cases. Therefore, juries decide if the law is just or should be applied concerning the case at hand, and any interference with the jury's prerogative is jury tampering, and thereby a denial of due process. If a judge or prosecutor addresses the jury to persuade in the law, the jury is no longer impartial, and the judge or prosecutor is guilty of jury tampering. The constitutions of most of our states assert that all powers is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves in all cases in which they think themselves competent, as in electing their functionaries, executive and legislative, and deciding by a jury of themselves both facts and law in all judiciary cases in which any fact is involved, or may ask by representatives freely and equally chosen, that is their right and duty, if it be at all times armed to freedom of persons, freedoms of religion, freedoms of property, and freedoms of the press. Thomas Jefferson in a letter to John Cartwright, 1824. Kentucky Resolution, Nullification of Law, a series of resolutions drawn up by Jefferson and adopted by the legislator of Kentucky in 1799, protesting against the alien and sedition laws, declaring their illegalities, announcing the strict constitutionalist theory of the federal government, and declaring nullification to be the rightful remedy. Conclusion, the lawful path. The sheriff is the people's last line of defense. The American sheriff must educate himself of the aforesaid duties and work with the awakened people across America to enforce the law with arrest and indictments. Only then can we save America from the tyrants that are destroying our American way of life, replacing law with fiction. If the sheriff is unsure of his duties, he can call upon the jury administrators once they are seated in the courts, and until that time, you can fax your concerns to this common law grand jury at the number above. And we will answer your concerns with the necessary law that will empower you. The fate of America literally rests in you doing the just thing. Wherefore, the unified United States common law grand, no, the unified common law grand juries, that's collective across the nation, stewards of the common law on behalf of the people and in the interest of justice, ordered all federal agents, FBI, U.S. Marshals, state, city, town, village, code enforcement officers are subservient to the county sheriff, being the only elected law enforcement officer. He is the chief law enforcement officer and the highest peace officer of the entire county in which he was elected to secure the peace. In all emergencies and in state emergencies, the sheriff are the CLEO, the chief law enforcement officer. With the power to posse, power of posse comitatus to resist the power of sheriff during a state of emergency is to resist the people and therefore an act of sedition. Ordered, in a state of emergency, all sheriffs shall perform their sworn duties to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution for the United States of America, to protect the people of the county, private property, and all the assets of the county. The sheriff alone is responsible to maintain law and order in the county and to work with other county sheriffs across the state and across the nation to do the same. If the sheriff permits the suspension of the United States Constitution in the county, liberty will be lost forever. The sheriff, too, wars against the people. Ordered, all sheriffs and marshals have received free copies of the Constitution and common law handbooks from the unified common law grand juries in their states. Additional copies can be ordered at nationallibertyalliance.org. All sheriffs, marshals, and their deputies are to take civic courses, such as the free one at nationallibertyalliance.org. Ordered, all sheriffs and marshals are to protect the people's unalienable rights of due process. Special considerations. Connecticut Constitution, Article 4, Section 25, requires the election of a sheriff every 4 years. Legislators, by an act of referendum, had no lawful authority to abolish the sheriffs, only the only constitutional officer. Marbury versus Madison. The legislators cannot alter the Constitution by an ordinary act. An act of the legislator repugnant to the Constitution is void. Therefore, the law, and thereby the sheriff is reinstated, therefore, until the law and thereby the sheriff is reinstated, state marshals are responsible to protect the Constitution above any orders given by an elected official. The office of sheriff never existed in Alaska. Therefore, until a constitutional office can be established in Alaska, the state Alaska state troopers are to keep the duty of the sheriff as law enforcement, not code enforcement officers, and are responsible to protect the Constitution above any order given by any elected official. Ordered, legislators of Connecticut State and Alaska are to remedy the elected sheriff predicament immediately. Ordered, news media, under penalty of law, editors are ordered to perform their First Amendment duty and report and or print a copy of the people copy for the people. Failure to do so, seeing you have a duty to inform, will be considered aiding and abetting the enemy. Questions concerning the common law may be directed to the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury fax number, and we will respond forthwith by fax. Ordered under seal, and it's dated for the 20th, which we're probably going to hold this off till the 20th. We were planning on doing it tomorrow, but after reading it aloud, I see that there's some redundancies here I think we're going to try to clean up, and maybe take a few things out. I'll try to make a few things a little more clearer. So it really does benefit us also to read this out loud, because then you can really, you know, get the true essence and find the errors as you go forward. All right, that brings us to the end of this. Just a couple of quick announcements and we'll open up the phones. Let's see. We need people to fill numerous leadership roles. We need people to volunteer. Anybody taken the course particularly and have checked the box for administrators in the counties for the grand juries particularly should be volunteering their time during this time period, and they'll be learning some more about way things work so that they'll be able to perform their duties once they take these positions. So again, we need lots of leaders. We need state coordinators. We have some committees that don't have leaders. We're looking for a retired sheriff to run the sheriff's committee. We started a militia committee. I believe we have two. We have a director already running that, I believe. So we have a couple of people already involved, but we can use more, particularly anybody who is in the militia, particularly people who are leaders of the militia. You know, we're looking for those people to join up with that committee for the purpose of organizing the militias across the United States. The federal government has not kept up on the militias as they were required to do under Article 1 of the Constitution. The legislators were ordered by the people to provide for the militia, to provide for the arming of the militia, and that the states were to take control by you know, appointing the necessary leaders of that militia within their own states. The militia can be called by the governor, but it also could be called up by the president of the United States. This idea of homeland security and or armed forces coming on the land of the people to enforce any kind of a thing is not constitutional. The constitutional provides very, very clear language, and we do cover this in another paper. The Constitution provides for very clear language should there be an insurrection or a problem in America that it is the militia to be called forth. It is the militia to suppress the insurrection. And not any kind of a an army or military process, and certainly not some kind of an organization called Homeland Security. Let's see, faxing program. Well, like I said, we started faxing out. Money is coming in. It's been feeding it pretty good. So far we're doing okay. We still need some more money, but. Generally, we are moving forward with the project, and we do have quite a bit of money. We've already paid for quite a bit of the faxing. Let me just run this list. Sheriff's Committee, Oath Keepers Committee, and Militia Committee. We're looking for people, leadership in those roles. I got two questions. Before I go to the two questions, anything anybody else has to announce? Gerard, Gary, Robert? Jan, anything to bring up before we get going?
No, I'm good.
Just start.
We got a Gloria out there. If she's out there, I want her to get in the queue. I think she is in the queue. I want to hear from her first because she's in there 25 times. I want to see if she's a real person.
Okay. And anybody who hasn't been in the queue hasn't been able to get into the queue or get anything in the last couple of weeks, they should come in first at star 6 to get into the queue. Anybody who's been in the queue in the past couple of weeks, you know, wait a minute or two before you hit your star 6 to get into the queue. A couple of questions. Someone asked, I plan to be doing the lawsuit with the CPS, and I'd like to know, will we be notified that a case has been filed, and what is the process? Everything we do, we will notify people right here on the Monday night program. Anything that needs to really inform the whole mass of people, we will call for special meetings and we'll enlighten the people on what we're doing. Every time we make a move or do anything, we will tell the people what we're doing in the case and inform them. Anyway, I don't mind helping in any way. I believe I stand with NLA on everything you stand for, but I don't want to give anyone false hopes, as a lot of us are tied, and I know more of the people that will join the suit for justice. Please let me know by replying by phone. Well, I'm going to reply right here on the Monday night program is, again, we will be forthwith with any information, and we believe that what we're doing, we're going to be doing in ways that they're not going to be able to defend themselves, and people are going to be able to get their children back. We do feel pretty strong about that. There was also another question concerning about monies collected on behalf of the CPS cases. Any money that is collected or taken, you know, through the suit will go into an escrow account, which I will have no authority or control over. I already talked with a couple of people, actually, but they're going to be looking to find somebody that, you know, an upright individual that will hold the escrow accounts. And so I spoke with Gina, and I mentioned it to I think I mentioned it to Robert and Jen. If I haven't, well, I am now. But I did tell Gina to call them, and they should be looking for someone who's been a member with us for a long time, at least over a year, and someone who has high integrity and was willing to take a hold of the of an escrow account. Anyone controlling that escrow account and dispersing funds, there should be, of course, some compensation for that. So, of course, that would have to come out. It's got to be something reasonable, nothing outrageous, you know. But maybe they'd keep their hours, and we'd have to decide what hourly pay that person would get. But there's not a lot of hours to be involved, I don't think, in that. But nevertheless, they need to be paid for the work. And so a small fee would come out of the monies that would be received for restitution for the individuals involved in that case. There was also a provision made and of 10% donation from the people to National Liberty Alliance. National Liberty Alliance is not going to represent anyone, by the way. It's the Unified Common Law Grand Jury that's going to go in as prosecutor and representation of the people, because that's the only way we can do it. Because the state surely won't do anything, so we're going to do it ourselves and go forward. There's legal recourse to do this. And so National Liberty Alliance is really just a facilitator for knowledge, information, education, organization, communication, and that's its extent. And so, of course, in order for us to continue, we need donations, and we thought 10% is reasonable. A lawyer would take 33% or more of this kind of an action, and we're not lawyers, though. Okay, I think that's everything I've got. If nobody has anything, I guess we'll open up the lines for questions and comments. So let's do that. The first question, individual, someone, Grace. You've been unmuted. Go right ahead. Well, actually, we lost Grace. She just fell off, and Ann from Tennessee is opened. Go right ahead. Grace, yes, you might want to get back into the queue.
This is Wonder Woman in Tennessee. I have a question, Mr. Rash.
Hey, how you doing?
You mentioned about the fine, sir. I have a question about you mentioned 18 U.S.C. 2071 and 2076. I have two questions. Number one, are there any common law grand jurors seated now in the USA?
No, only we organizing here, to my knowledge, are the only common law grand juries that I'm aware of. That doesn't mean that some small group somewhere that we aren't aware of hasn't done something somewhere in some county, so that's a possibility, but I'm not aware of it. I haven't heard of it, and I'm sure if it was at this point, we would have heard of that. So no, the answer clearly to that is no.
Okay, so
probably no. Anyway, let's put it that way.
Okay. So the second question is, if the common law grand jury is ever seated, and a person has brought a common law action, a court of record action before the United States Supreme Court, they've gone through the federal court, district court, appellate court. Now they're at the United States Supreme Court. If that United States Supreme Court denies the writ, or requires a filing fee, or fill out a motion for informal paupers, can the common law grand jury review that? And with that,
well,
I yield.
Can the common law grand jury what?
Review that. Review the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. The grand jury can review anything. They can even review the United States Supreme Court, believe it or not. But, of course, there'd have to be a violation of the Constitution involved in that. First of all, anybody going through an appellate system has gone through a fictional court and not a constitutional court. And if you're finding that you're going through that process now, you need to start all over and move yourself by habeas corpus into a common law court and cause them to show cause, which they cannot show cause, and you'll be able to eliminate the problem. And that's how you would solve that problem. Of course, you need a little knowledge to do that, and everything you need to know is up on National Liberty Alliance. People need to be educated. The first order of business is coming and taking our civics course. We teach a lot of the common law inside our civics course. We have lectures, quite a few lectures in there. But it also covers history and how America got to the state it's in. A lot of the good documentaries that shows the people how this has happened. It also has constitutional courses, and we're going to be adding another constitutional course, which is really a point by point, particularly of the every article of the Constitution. And so we'll be adding that shortly. We haven't had time to write it yet, but we'll be focusing in on that shortly. Now, let me see if I answered your question. Oh, yeah. So basically, again, let me reiterate this. Anybody that is appealing a case is not in a court of record. They would be in an equity court, and if it's a criminal case, definitely it would be in some kind of a de facto court system. It would not be under the Constitution. So the first order of business, once you recognize and realize that you've been hijacked into a foreign court, you discover it. And you could discover this at any time. You could discover it. You could be sitting in prison and already been convicted and discover it then. And you could start the process right then and there by habeas corpus and shut the whole thing down. No judge can stop a habeas corpus. The habeas corpus has been around for a long time. I believe we read at least the 15th century. And it's been in England all that time, and it's been in America from before America became the United States of America. And after the United States it became the United States of America, the process has continued. Habeas corpus, again, is a process. It's similar. They created a process called Article 78, which is a show cause. And that's a really good article, even though it's statutory court, because the other side has to show cause, and you could do that at any time. Show cause on why you're doing this. Show cause on why you're saying this. Bring your evidence. I want to see it. And it's called a show cause. Well, a habeas corpus is a show cause of the highest form, and it says bring your evidence on why you're holding this prisoner. That's what it's all about. It's bring the body of evidence, and show why you're going to hold him. And the law requires... The process and procedure of law requires that a default in that must end up with the releasing of this of the prisoner and the prevention of the case to continue forward. They defaulted. Anybody who goes through a habeas corpus and eventually is released from prison, not only can that case go no further, you've already won the case in the civil court because now you can take it back into the court and do a regular show cause on why a remedy shouldn't be applied for restitution for the individual who was unconstitutionally detained and arrested. You can also seek criminal charges against those individuals and require that they be prosecuted in a court of law. All you have to do is do an affidavit and file it with the sheriff and then the court case begins, okay, that you've been violated, you've been injured, you've been incarcerated, you've been kidnapped, and you file it with the sheriff. Now, sheriffs don't understand this kind of a case right now, but hopefully we're going to educate them enough to understand it. Anyway, did I get it all?
You did, but Mr. Duraz, you were focusing on a criminal case. My concern was on civil cases. If a
okay.
United States Supreme Court employee refuses to file that writ of certiorari and refuse because of fallacy.
That's a criminal case now. That becomes a criminal case. They have to go forward with that. And what you do is you file in a federal court a violation against your unalienable rights of due process because they are violating your unalienable right of due process and they're doing it under the color of law. That makes it a criminal case. In a federal court.
I get it.
Okay?
All right. Okay. Thank you. I yield.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. Next question unknown, 530, first name and state.
Hey, John. This is Kelly Mordecai. How you doing?
How you doing?
Hey, good. Hey, I hear you connected with Jim Condit. That's a good thing.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, he's a good guy. I was on a conference call last night. Hey, I'm calling to request some prayer for someone. I don't know if we can do that over the line.
Yeah, this is not the appropriate place to do that. When we start our Bible study back up, that might be an appropriate place you can come and ask. But we wouldn't do that live anyway, though, but to request people to for prayer. you know, that, of course, should be acceptable. But the appropriate place would be on the Saturday nights when we do our Bible program.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you the story of what's going on. There's a man in trial right now, Daniel Smith, Project Green Life.
And by the way, people, as they're listening to your story, can take that up in prayer for you, but go ahead.
Oh, I appreciate that, yeah. Yeah, I've been following him for a couple of years now. He is facing 35 years. He's been selling MMS,
I'm interested. We're trying to contact that individual to do a habeas corpus for him, but we've been unsuccessful. If anybody can make a contact to that person and get him to our investigative committee, we are very much willing because I use MMS. I've got quite a bit of MMS. I know a lot of people who use it. And the idea of them putting someone in jail for trying to cure themselves or others of cancer and other diseases is just it's horrific. And so, if you got any contact to those people, we are interested in helping them. And we don't charge anybody anything.
He's in trial right now.
We can pull him out of trial.
Well, here's what happened. This has been a 3-year battle for him. But I got contact in 2012 because he read my book, and he tried to get in front of the grand jury, and Parisi is the federal prosecutor, and he had to get the matter in front of 3 grand juries to finally get an indictment. Mr. Smith is trying to get in front of the grand jury. They even made arrangements, but when Mr. Smith showed up for this, Parisi, the prosecutor, said, he played games and wouldn't get in front of the grand jury.
Hang on a second. Gerard, isn't that the guy that we were considering being the good guy, Parisi? Isn't it that federal prosecutor?
No.
No? Okay,
no,
sorry.
Berhard that's been indicting the judges and the politicians down in New York.
All right, go ahead. As you were saying, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So then what happened was He subpoenaed the records of the grand jury, the transcripts, and basically what I've been hearing is the prosecutor lied and dissuaded the grand jury from receiving him. So he's filed motion after motion, other things, and the judge is just chronically corrupt. It's really sad
on. Let me explain something. I guarantee that if we filed a writ of habeas corpus, that the other side would never answer that writ of habeas corpus. They would default, and the case would be shut down because that's the law.
Who ever heard of a prosecutor subpoenaing the grand jury's transcript?
Yeah, they can't do that.
They're top secret.
That it's statutory puppet grand jury, doesn't it?
Well, Daniel Smith got it. The prosecutor is the same person that got him an indictment in front of the grand jury. Parisi's taking it from grand jury indictment all the way to prosecution.
Look, that's not saying much with their system. They can indict anybody they want. They do.
Oh, I know.
No problem with it.
Right.
All that is illegal, and that could be all that could be battled. Here's what you do. Look, if you have a contact to this guy, and we can get him or a next friend, someone close to him that will do the paperwork on his behalf or him, if he does it. We don't need much information. We will do a habeas corpus for this guy, and I guarantee you they will not answer this habeas corpus. They will default, and the results will have to be through judicial process. He'd be released from custody, and that court case would be shut down. Because
so you've seen
that's
this happen many
the
times?
Law. That's the law.
So you've seen that happen many times
I have done it only once, and I did it as a person, not as the grand jury. I wasn't involved with the unified grand jury doing it, but as a person for another person, I've done it, and it worked. I know others who have done it. Bill Thornton has done it. So absolutely it works. Once you put forth a habeas corpus into the court, it's a judicial process. It's written. We read the law right there. The judicial process must go forward. No one can stop it. You can't conceal it. You can't mutilate it. You can't remove it. You can't stop it. Anybody who does goes to jail. And if a judge does it, he gets 20 years in jail. I don't think we read that one. But he gets 20 years in jail if the judge stops it. So they can't stop it. So the process is they have 3 days to answer. And with good cause, they can get up to 20, but they have to give good cause. If they don't have good cause, they're not going to get it. So, because after all, we have a person in prison that appears doesn't belong there. And so they got 3 days to answer it. And at 5 o'clock on day three, if he doesn't answer it, in order to let the prisoner goes forth. Now, they have this, you know, they have to take the paperwork and they have to put it on the docket and it has to, you know, move through the system, acclimate, so to speak, and then let loose. We're waiting right now for an individual to be released, and we're expecting that he will be released very soon. As a matter of fact, we're going to give him to the end of next week, maybe not even that long. We're going to give him to a certain point of time, and if they don't go forward, then we're going through indictments on all those people.
He's furiously busy with trial probably every night, so he's going to appeal it, of course.
Why appeal anything? That, again, once he appeals it, you're not in a court of record if he appeals it, are you? You can't appeal a case that is in a court of record unless someone's unalienable rights was violated in that process, which is usually never the case, with the exception of the person who's really in an administrative court, a fictional court. Look it, he's in a foreign court. He needs to get out of it. Habeas corpus will remove him. Look, if you have any connection, do me a favor. Get a hold of that person. Give them my phone number or get me that person's phone number. I'd like to talk with them. Or get them to our investigative committee, Greg. His phone number's up there in the directory. Get it to him, and we will work out a habeas corpus. I'm very interested in this case because this is about MMS. And it doesn't – look, he needs to understand whatever he's doing in his court case, what we're doing for him on the other side – if that continues, it doesn't affect anything. It'll shut it down, though.
Here's a tricky one, though, because the judge ordered last week, the judge ordered a defense attorney for Mr. Smith. All right? And it's a complicated case. The defense attorney was basically bullied into it by the judge to become the defender. And the defense attorney says, you know, it's a public defender, I don't have time to prepare for this.
Mm-hmm. But look, it doesn't. It's all fiction. It's a lie. It has nothing to do with our courts of justice, and we can remove it from that court. Look at
right.
Look,
so what I'm saying is, right now, he has to use his public defender to file the writ of habeas corpus.
Yeah,
because the judge puts it on him.
How it works?
Hey, John.
Yeah,
I think this conversation is really not advancing.
Right. I'm just going to settle up.
I think we need to take it offline because I don't believe it's a two-way discussion.
Well, yeah, I agree. Look, here's the final. I'm just going to make the final statement and we will move on. Look, the man is facing 35 years for helping people to be cured of cancer. They've been trying to get a hold of, what's his name, that was the founder of the MMS. What's that guy's name again? I can't remember.
Jim Humble.
Oh.
They're trying to get him, but he's been out of country too long. They can't get him. So what do? They go after someone selling. As a matter of fact, the MMS that I bought through that guy. Okay, I found another source that I'm buying through now. But in any event, okay, but that's drying up because it's closing them up everywhere. If this guy is facing 35 years, everybody's afraid to sell MMS, and now we, the people, lost the ability to have something that cures cancer and many other diseases. And who are these people to do it? They don't have that authority. They don't have that right. So therefore,
you can't say it cures cancer. You're breaking the law.
Yeah, of course. Well,
you're
breaking the
law three times tonight, John.
Well,
so how do I get a hold of you then?
So all he has to do is get a hold of the director, Greg. Go to our directory. Look on the investigative research committee. You'll see Greg's name there. He is the director of that committee. Get a hold of him, and he will work all the paperwork out, and we can, as fast as he could move, we could move, and we can get him out of this whole thing and shut it down. It needs to be shut down. So there's no reason to discuss it any further other than that, okay?
So get a hold of Greg, okay. Prayers.
Okay.
All right, John, before you move on to the next call, Grace dialed back in, and I'd like to take her off mute because there's like 12 of them and find out if this is for real. I'm gonna take Grace off of mute right now.
12 Grace.
Hi, John.
Grace, you're on the line.
This is Grace from Charleston.
Yeah.
Can you explain, Grace, why there's 12 of you?
Excuse me, I didn't hear that.
Can you explain why there appears to be 12 dial-in numbers under your name only?
Oh, yes. It was really strange because I kept being put on hold as the
started putting you on hold at number 15.
It was wild because, and then I dialed back in and the same thing kept happening.
Why do you need more than one?
We really don't, but it was just to be counted in.
Oh, all right. Well, you know, I don't know what to say now, Gerard. You and I got a little bit of egg on our face. We thought we were under a denial of service attack, Grace. We apologize.
Are you serious? Well, pardon me. I didn't mean to cause such a ruckus, but no.
But Grace, you are the first one in the queue. I'm going to turn it over to you now, and I am going to shut up and mute myself.
Oh, you're fine. No worries.
Hey, Grace, what's your question or your comment?
Yes. Hi, John. Well, I wanted to know, how can I print out the court handbook? Because I seem to be getting the court handbook instruction page one, and that's all I'm able to print out as of now. So,
well, you should be able to go, if you go to purchase it, and right before you go to purchase it, you'll see click here for a PDF copy, and if you click on that, you'll get a full copy, and you can print out the PDF. You can save it to your computer. You know, if people want to get it that way, that's fine. But if they want the little handbooks, you know, which cost money to print, you know, we are selling the little handbooks and for
the common law handbooks.
Yeah.
We've done those at the sheriff's elections, and we handed those out there, and also in a 9/12 meeting here in Charleston.
Right. Uh huh. Yeah, so those are available, but right there, right when you go in to buy them, you'll see a little button that says PDF copy right there. You can read it. And you can, of course, save it to your computer, have a copy, and you can print them out on regular, you know, 8x11, 8.5x11 sheets.
All right, sure enough. Thank you, John.
Okay.
I just joined NLA, and I'm really grateful because I see a solution here, and I've been knowing that there's been issues going on with our Constitution, but I wasn't quite aware of the common law, and I'm very grateful for your free civics course. And, yeah, everybody should be donating because that alone, that knowledge alone is amazing. I've been learning so much.
Right. Well, we realize here at National Liberty Alliance that we can't sell anything because how can you sell liberty? We have to give
away.
And we have to have people to get involved. And so, you know, we do depend on people, you know, realizing that it takes time to put this stuff together and so on. And, you know, donation of $5 a month is really appreciated. Widow's Mite. So that's the most powerful, in my opinion. You know, most of the money we collect is from people at $5, you know. I mean, we do get some people that give a little more, and, you know, we'll get $100 here or $50 there, and we do appreciate that, of course. But most people are $5 donators, and that works out well.
Sure. I've done the $5 donations now, so. Mm-hmm. And I could, if I have more, you know, I do, and I'm more than grateful because this is a big deal. This is for all of us, we the people.
Right.
I do want to volunteer my time and services.
Okay. Well, yeah, definitely. And everybody should. Look, if we the people don't step up and put our time into this effort, then we're not going to save our nation. So if people want to be free and they want their children to be free, let's get involved. We need lots of leaders. Go talk with the leadership that we have. We have, you know, district coordinators. We have state coordinators. We have national coordinators. Go to our directory page. Talk to some of those people. Find out what's available or look at the committees. And, you know, there are committees we need leaders in. We need state leaders. We need a lot of leaders. So
sure, I contacted
volunteer your
Greg.
Time. Yeah, great.
I contact Greg and I've contacted Robert. And, you know, I understand that, you know, this everything is just tying all in together. And also I just wanted to say that on June 13, there's going to be a prayer of the nation, a nationwide prayer for our nation.
Okay, June 13?
Yes. Here in Charleston, it's going to be in the Coliseum, so I'm pretty sure it'll probably be in all the states.
Good, appreciate that. Anything else, Grace?
No, thank you so much. God bless you, all of you.
Okay,
thank
you too, and thank you for the call.
My pleasure.
All right. Let's go to the next person, which, let's see, hopefully we don't knock them out of the queue. Brandy, is it, from Oregon?
Yes, sir. How are you doing this evening, Mr. Goresh?
Good.
David would like to speak with you, if that was okay, and let you, y'all know what's going on.
Mr. Goresh, my name is David Lee. We just served a writ of habeas corpus
petition
for cause.
And a writ of error.
And a writ of error. And we're going to be going in front of an Article 3 judge. The difference is
no such thing as an
obvious.
Article 3 judge.
What's that?
No such thing as an Article 3 judge. That animal doesn't exist.
Well, then we'll have
I've
to
heard
tell
people
them that
talking about
it.
That, and I scratch my head when I read my Constitution because I can't seem to find there's only an Article 2, period.
Mm. So they lied to us on recording today.
So
well, wait a second. Maybe I'm mixing the articles up. Hold on a second, because legislative and then administrative is two, right? Then no, judicial is two. I'm pretty sure. Let me double check because I'm a little confused at the moment. But I believe the judicial process is Article 2. Let me get out my Constitution. Okay. Okay, Article 2 is the executive power. Article 3 is the court. Yes, there's a group calling talking about Article 4, and no such thing exists. Article 3 is the correct one. And an Article 3 court is a constitutional court. And if a writ of habeas corpus has already been put forward, and if it's been done right, there's nothing for any judge to come in and decide anything. It's all judicial process.
Right. And we're going in front of an Article 1 judge before the Article 3 judge shows up.
There's no such thing. There's only an Article 3 court. That's all there is. And there is no Article 1 court or any of those things. That doesn't exist.
Okay.
So I don't even know why they talk about these things.
Well, they're trying to confuse us.
What we had is we received a notice because we put the writ of habeas petition and the writ of error. And, of course, you know, David had his trial. They wouldn't allow him to present evidence. They basically railroaded
us. That's why you got to do a habeas corpus and get out of there. And the process is first, it's a process we just recently taught. If you've been listening, you should know the process maybe. But first the petition has to be put forward. Then the petition has to be granted. If you put it to the judge, then the judge will not grant it. Guaranteed the judge will not grant that habeas corpus. I have never heard of a judge granting a habeas corpus other than the habeas corpus given by the federal courts to move a prisoner from a state court to a federal court. And they do a habeas corpus to produce the body and receive the body and take control of the body. Those kind of habeas corpuses happen. But other than that, you do a habeas corpus to get out of a statutory court. No judge is going to approve it. We never allow them to make the decision. That has to be done by the petitioner himself or by some other entity. In the case of what we're doing, it's done by the common law grand jury. So the grand jury actually is the arbitrator of the decision to permit and make go forward the habeas corpus. And once that happens, there's nothing they can do about it. We just did this for a guy in Utah, and look, they're way behind. We filed the papers. It took almost a week for the papers to show up on the docket. Okay, that shows you how far behind they are. Now, why did it take a week? We filed directly with the courts. They were served personally, everybody, including the court. It should have been on the docket that day. Now, why didn't it get on the docket that day? It didn't get on the docket that day because they were very angry about that. And the judge and the prosecutor and all the other people involved, they got debating what they're going to do about it. And the paper probably sat on a paper on a desk, and they kept staring at it as they were trying to figure out what they were going to do. And they came to the conclusion, well, there's no one here that's willing to go to jail by removing that, so we got to put it in the docket. And they did. And that's happened the same way down in New York City when I did one. Same thing happened down there. Okay, so it's the regular way they do things. So it takes a little time to go through the process, more than it normally would have, because they're trying to get out from underneath it, but they can't.
Well, we went the day before his trial to the U.S. District Court in Portland and filed this writ of habeas corpus petition and the writ of errors. And Robert Bristow was with us. And the first notification that we got is that they want us to accept a magistrate, which is not acceptable for us. And so we were trying because we...
Well, no. Look at that. In a court of law, that is the proper process, is the magistrate. You don't want a judge in there. And the magistrate is to dispose of it accordingly. And it should be under judicial review, okay? You see, when we do one... We put it under judicial review. Whatever that judge does, he needs to report immediately. The moment he does it, we want to know by fax and by mail exactly what he did and what his decision was in detail for judicial review. Okay? Okay. The problem for them and the good for us is the individual never comes up for the judicial review because he never makes a decision because the other side defaults, and they always default. Why do they default? Because they can't show due process procedure, and therefore they have to default. They don't have subject matter jurisdiction. They don't have personam jurisdiction. There's no sworn statement. There's no injured party. There's no affidavit. There's nothing. Okay? So they can never show anything, and that's why they default every time. Now, if you're going to go discuss the matter, now you have a whole different problem. They're playing a con game. They're trying to figure a way or a procedure that'll appease you, and you think it happened when it didn't happen. No, you file it on a Thursday. Unless you file it on a Monday. Monday doesn't count.
Yeah.
Tuesday morning, that's how you did it. That's fine. Tuesday morning, 9 o'clock is the beginning of the first day. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Thursday at 5 p.m. is the last day. If they didn't respond by Thursday, 5 p.m., the last day, then a filing on Friday morning at 9 a.m., for default is the appropriate action, and then they have to release the body. The order goes forward to the marshal or to the sheriff, depending on what kind of a case, if it's a state case or whatever. So the order goes through to the jailer, release the prisoner under due process of law. Also goes to the prosecutor. Also goes to the judge. It goes to the court. It's filed in a docket. Everything is done, and they have to release the prisoner.
Right. And so what we're doing is...
Hold on a second. This is David Lee.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with Robert Bristow. He was my courtroom observer.
Yeah, I know.
In the process of this alleged trial, I showed up with every ounce of evidence that these people fabricated. Everything that they did.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because they're going to do what they want. It's a court of chancery. You
right?
See? They're not going to.
I'm not in an Article 3 court.
No, you're not. You're in a court of chancery, which is a violation of your unalienable rights on the law and against the law of the land. It's illegal
right.
What they're doing.
Right.
There's
so
only one.
Right
there's
the
only
middle,
one
right
remedy.
In the middle of trial, I walked out of the courthouse.
Well, you got to be careful of that because they may incarcerate you. But nevertheless, you know, here is the bottom line. Hold on a minute. This is the bottom line. There's only one remedy. It's a properly done habeas corpus. If you've done it properly, it should go through the process.
Yes.
Okay, well, there's nothing to hear. There's no hearing to go to. You want someone has got to file the paper saying they defaulted. Did you file a default? It's a one-page paper.
We are in the process of doing that.
We are doing that right now.
File a default, and then you have to get from the sovereign of the court, which is the petitioner, they have to write a paper, concerning the finality of the court. And that the prisoner has to be released, has to be filed with the court. The judge is not going to do it.
It's called a decision. You've got to make a decision to release the prisoner, right?
Exactly. Now, I did that. You know, I never went through that part of the process, and they released them because I didn't know back then when I did it all of the parts. But they released them because they went through the process. It was in the federal court, and they finished up the process because they did it according. They knew they had to do that. But, go to Bill Thornton. He teaches that stuff on 1215.org. Get the paperwork there and see how he does it.
Okay, we will definitely do that. But we did have to pack up everything we owned and leave our property and go to a safe place because I have an 11-year-old son, because we are being stalked by them, even though they proceeded with that trial without David there, and they have sentencing scheduled for May 26th. So we've already gone to the U.S. District Court, done the writ of habeas corpus petition off the NLA website. We did the writ of errors off the NLA website, and now we're going to do the notice of default, and I guess we'll have to wait to find out
what you need to. What you need to realize, though, is what you're seeing on our website is one done by the Unified Common Law Grand Jury. It has to be tweaked a little different. I mean, you can use the stuff
we
that
did.
We have and a lot of the wording and everything, and that's why I say go to Bill Thornton. Bill Thornton does it from the perspective of the sovereign, okay, the petitioner.
I am familiar with Bill Thornton.
You take his paperwork, you take our paperwork, and you find the best between the two, and you bring it together from the perspective of the petitioner or of the sovereign of the court, which is not the grand jury in your case. It is the petitioner. And write it up, that part of it, the way Bill teaches it.
Right,
okay,
and we did. So. We did. And it was looked over by Greg Todd and everybody and John Rowe to make sure that we had everything done before we filed this in the proper manner.
Well, I don't know why they would have done that, because they shouldn't be doing that. We're not to be given any kind of legal advice.
They didn't give us legal advice. They just said that it was written properly and that that we were on the right track and we did the right thing. That's all they said, just in confidence to make sure that when we went to file this, that we, were in the right format and things like that, because formatting is a, hard thing sometimes. It's a big deal. But now we just wanted to let you guys know that's what occurred and that we did withdraw from the court, and we are taking it now from the state court into the district court and then and hopefully into the common law grand jury's hands.
Go straight into a federal court with it, and I guess that's what you mean when you say the district court, the federal court, right?
Yes, we went
that's
straight
where
to
you
the
want
district
to be
court.
So, okay. All right.
So we've already done this process.
And it's,
so
it's a federal judge or magistrate that needs to be at the head of this thing, not a state, not the court. The judge that you're going up against or the judge in the court that you're in has nothing to do with it. You can't go to that person. Okay, you got to go. I always go for the chief judge of the district, unless it's a federal case and the chief judge is hearing it. Obviously, you got to get someone else, but that's who I go to. That's whose name I put on
to
make them responsible. Huh?
Okay, he wants to ask a question real quick.
Well, John, I have a question. How in the world do I get in front of a common law grand jury to present the evidence that I have?
Well, right now you can't. We're fighting to get into the courts. We're taking on certain things, and we're going to be doing certain things, and which I don't want to talk about yet. But if we're in the courtrooms already, then we would be in every county. There'd be administrators for the grand jury, for the common law grand jury, and they could solve most of the problems without even going into the grand jury. And if they can't, of course, then they take it to the grand jury, just as a prosecutor. The administrators for the grand jury are the investigative body for the grand jury. That's
right.
What they are. So,
well,
but that's not in place yet. That's what we're fighting to get in place.
I kind of get that, Dan's. I'm a member of the NLA. Even the grand jury. Now, I didn't find out until the day of trial that all these witnesses, they're all buddies of each other, went in front of a grand jury to bring these charges.
Right, and I'll bet you dollars to donuts, if you go search it out, you'll find no certified papers, no certified evidence or anything that was produced to the grand jury. And first of all, the grand jury is tainted because they asked the questionnaire, they do a psychological review on the people. They want to get the right people, they want to get the right foreman, they want to get the people they can control. That's number one. The second thing is that they're advised of the law by the prosecutor, there's another violation that's called jury tampering. Then on top of that, when the evidence is talked about, they produce stuff that's nothing certified. There's no affidavits. There's no sworn statements. It's all hearsay, and the grand jury makes its decision off of that. Then it goes into a court and they're presuming, well, we got it. There's one case. Well, it doesn't matter. We've got a grand jury indictment. We don't need this. No, excuse me. You can't have a court case without an injured party, and you can't have a court case without that injured party doing a sworn affidavit. If there's no sworn affidavit, there is no open court case, period. Of course, in their courts of chancery, they do whatever they please. So that's what you need to understand. So anyway,
well,
I can't
spend
too much more time on this, but go ahead.
So now we're in a federal court, so what you said makes sense to us, and we will still be demanding our common law jurisdiction all the way up until the common law grand jury comes in. And that's what we're doing. We're sticking our ground and sticking to our jurisdiction and where we belong. So that's what we're doing. We're just trying to get the Clatsop County Circuit Court and the Seaside Municipal Court to cease and desist their actions because they ignored the writ of error and the petitions for writ of habeas corpus. So that's what we're trying to do, and we want to let you guys know that we are safe, but we were not safe. And we are working on trying to help escort that in, the common law grand jury.
All right. Appreciate it.
Yep, and God bless y'all, and y'all have a wonderful evening. And
hey, you too.
Keep us in your prayers.
Okay, thank you. You too. All right, right, Gerard, you want to pick it up from here?
Yeah, as soon as I get myself unmuted here. Hang on a minute.
Sounds like you succeeded with that.
Okay.
Next I think question. If you just click the button, next question, I think you should go to Don from California. Good, give it a try. Yep, there you go. All right.
Go ahead, Don. You're unmuted.
Oh, okay. How are you guys doing tonight? I just had a question about Jade Helm, and I wondered if you guys had read any of the articles on HEN at Hollow Earth Network.
We've read lots of articles from lots of different people. I don't know that I've read anything from Hollow Earth Network. There's certainly a lot of information I get through my email, and I usually browse all of it. Why, you have something that we don't know about, maybe? I mean, we
well,
understand.
Maybe because what you read on that, you can take it as gospel.
Mm-hmm.
I've been following it for years. They're never off. They're behind National Liberty Alliance. They've got plans for us in the future. A lot of interesting things. So you ought to try to tune in there once and just get your own opinion of what you think this program's about. But it's very, very interesting.
Yeah, well, we understand what, you know, what they're doing with the Jade Helm. I mean, they're trying to say we're kooky, but you look at all the evidence and you could and the so-called presidential executive orders along with what they're doing, and it could only be one thing. It's them getting ready to clamp down. So, and you know.
Well, that's been nullified, and that's why I wondered if you guys had read it, because the information is factual. So
mm-hmm.
It would really help. It would relieve your anxieties, I'm sure. So I won't go any further. I'll just leave it
all
there.
Right, I'll go look.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah, okay. We appreciate that.
Nullified.
Is that it?
That's it. I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay, thanks. Next question. Denise. 9408. Denise.
Hello. Hi. How are you doing?
Hey.
It's Dana. I'm the one who left the email for John. I had a question about the affidavit for the CCS lawsuit. I was trying to figure out, are we supposed to put the monetary damages on there that we're expecting or what?
Yeah, I'll run on that one. No, just put in your story, that's all. You should be able to talk with one of the receptionists that's taking the calls and to give you some advice if you don't know it. But basically your story, you know, on or about a certain day at about a certain time, certain individuals came and they took my children away. Well, however it started, you know, I mean, just tell your story.
Oh, I did all that.
Yeah,
I did all
that.
From
beginning to where you're at, and that's it. As far as monetary system, it's going to be a simple thing, and, you know, and that we're going for. We'll discuss that in further things we did do. If you go up to the page, CPS committee page and you go to that page, you'll see that there's some audio up there, some MP3s of meetings we had concerning this that I had run. I ran three meetings. And so it gets into all the details of all these things. I think it covers everything. Plus, recently, I had I was asked to come on to the call with the CPS group, and I came in there to explain certain things, the agreement and a few other things. And that's been recorded, and that also is up on that page. So I think there's maybe four MP3 recordings you can listen to, and you should be able to get everything out of that. And then, of course, when you have more questions, you can come here on a Monday night and ask questions. And if I'm invited over to, and if anything big comes up, I'll definitely come over to the meeting. But if I'm invited over there to answer questions, I'll come over from time to time to answer whatever they want.
Okay. Now, are you able to file a suit if you have an open case?
Absolutely.
Okay, because I know two people that have open cases. And
we're gonna do habeas corpuses to get their children back.
Okay. I guess that's it. Did you talk to Gina today? Because you said she was going to get with you. Because I told her I wanted to help.
I haven't spoken with her today, but I'm sure she's on the call, and she should give me a call tomorrow so we can update the receptionist information and any other thing. By the way, we'll have a board meeting tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and people who are interested in taking on certain roles definitely should come to that meeting. Well, even if you don't take, just to hear what's going on, because that's where really we do kind of nuts and bolts stuff and, different groups finding out where we're at, what we're doing, how we're advancing. But so people are welcome to that, and also as just to watch and listen, not to participate. But if you want to pipe in because you want to participate in a certain committee, by all means, pipe up and say, hey, I'd like to join that committee. And we'll get you connected to the right person and get into it. Or if you have another committee that you think might be advantageous for National Liberty to execute, then we'll take that under advisory. We'll take it to the advisory committee and see what they think, and then take it up the line, and we'll look at it from different levels and make a decision on whether another kind of a committee might be a wise thing to do, whatever that might be.
Okay.
So. All right, let me pass it back to Gerard. Go ahead, Gerard.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Denise. Next question is Jason. Hang on, for some reason you didn't...
No, you got Curtis there, isn't it?
Oh, okay. Curtis, or Stephanie.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious if you have any idea of a timeline when we may actually get to a courthouse or have something that actually ends up before a judge, sheriff has to back us up, just any idea at all.
Let me just pipe in here real quick. We will have nothing go before any judge. Okay, so we're not there. We are in the courtroom right now. We are the tribunal in the court of record right now. We started that when we filed the writ of habeas corpus. We just filed. We're filing another paper this week on the sheriff, and we have other papers being filed, and we're giving orders and commands, as the people should be doing, in our courts to bring them back to courts of justice. So we are in the court right now, and, the game is on, so to speak.
How many counties are you working on at this time?
Well, we're working in all 50 states. I don't know. I can't say how many counties we actually have, but we're working in all 50 states. And, of course, it's going to be more work to develop in every county. I think once we hit the landslide point, which I think is coming soon, once we hit that point, I think we'll start filling up county leadership very quickly. And that's where the rubber meets the road. Anybody who really wants a position, the position that is going to be potentially a lifetime position for themselves, to be able to really get involved and bring justice back into the courts, becoming an administrator on the county level is exactly what you want. That's where I want to be, is on the county level as an administrator in my county, one of four. There's four administrators in every county. That's what we're looking to put together. And those four individuals are the investigative body for both the trial and the grand jury. And those administrators are also the people who orientate the grand jury, prepare them with the necessary tools like principles and common law maxims to prepare them to be able to go in and do their job, which is very simple, nothing complex. And so that's where the rubber really meets the road. That's where the power and that's where the authorities, that's where the people are. So that's what I say, people, everyone, even people who are state coordinators, people who are on the committees and doing all this work that we have to be doing, okay, a lot of them are or should be administrators so that when their county position opens, they're going to go into them.
But let's not forget the fact that we're filing habeas corpuses in these courts and putting the judges in their place. So basically, we're giving orders to the judge, and they need to be releasing these people, these children, these prisoners. That's the grand jury. That's coming from the grand jury. So like John said, we are in those courts. And as those things, look, if they have to answer them and they don't answer them, so they default. And a default is a simple process. It's a due process process. You don't even need a judge to declare it a default. Look, your paper went in. Here's the stamp. It didn't get answered. You can go to the clerk, boom, and have it stamped. That's a default. Now, what can you do with a default? Well, guess what? You can do a lot of things with a default. So, you know, if they want to, normally they're going to let them go because they know what a default means. You know, look, if you could take your default and you can exercise it and you can collect on it, you can do whatever else you need to do in order to bring that forward. So that's where we're at. And so we're a lot farther than everybody thinks we are because they're not understanding the implications of what we're doing. So that being said, you know, we're there already, and it's just a matter of time as we notice these people more and more, and they're put into this horned dilemma that they can't answer. Because, look, they either have to say you're right or we're not under the Constitution. They're not ready to say they're not under the Constitution. I mean, we know what they're doing. We know that they're corporate, but they're not willing to do that. So that's why now is the time, because they're not ready to put the Constitution to bed. They're not ready to admit that the Constitution, it's in effect as long as we make it be in effect. That's the whole thing with the Constitution. You know, when George Bush said it's nothing but a GD piece of paper, he was right. It's nothing but a GD piece of paper until somebody holds it up in one hand and points to it the other hand with their pen or their gun or whatever. You know what I mean? It's the contract that we're under right now. And if they want to say that it's not enforced, then what they're doing is they're declaring war on the people. And they're not ready to do that, believe it or not. Anyway, that's the answer.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and then just wanted to share, this is Stephanie, South Dakota. And Curtis and I set up for National Liberty Alliance. It's called WeShareCrowdfunding.com/Bill of Rights. And so that will get money into, it's called Funding the National Liberty Alliance. And I had sent it to John on Skype, and then I sent it over to Sheila and Robert and Bristow, Ron Flick, and then Gerard, yours bounced back, so I didn't get it to you. I'm sorry for that. I apologize. And if you guys would take a look at that and see what you think, and your thoughts on some changes and how we can implement that in all the different counties, if you want to do it county by county to get the sheriff, so that we can have money for sheriffs in every county, or how you want to use it. And
there was something with crowd. One of them we went to, they wouldn't take on what they considered a political thing. I don't remember. We did two different kinds of funding. One of them we raised $4,000 or $5,000 with, but one of them wouldn't even take us. They said that we were political or something. I don't remember, but I'm certainly. You get them paperwork to us. We'll look at it, and I'll recognize if that's one of the ones that they told us we didn't qualify.
What we want to do with these things, though, because I'm interested in it, but give us a call, because this is something we need to discuss. Information like this flowing through the email doesn't necessarily get through the right way. It doesn't get through the door sometimes, or we just need more information, not enough to really make a decision. So actually a meeting. We should have a meeting. So just give me a call, and, you know.
Yeah, and I I tried to call you, and then I gave you Keith Broder's information, because what we did, it's a kind of like a pay it forward type program, and you get 100% of the profits rather than like Indigo or Kickstarter, any of those getting some administration fees.
Uh-huh.
So the WeShareCrowdfunding.com/Bill of Rights was set up for funding the National Liberty Alliance. That's what its mission is. And we took the mission statement off the website and then put some things from the Common Law Grand Jury handbook on there. And then we put the Quo Vanto on there. So it's all on there so that it's funding. So now that we have, now if we have people sign up, the money is being raised for National Liberty Alliance, but we wanted you to take a look at it to see what kind of changes you want on there and how you would want to set those up for each county.
Right. Again, you know, this would require a telephone meeting and maybe even looking at the internet at the time we're talking. That's what needs to be done. And actually, you know, we should probably set up a meeting time. If you work that out with, you know, Gerard, Robert, or Jan, you know, they'll work out a meeting. We'll come together, a few of us, and let's look at it. Let's look at the internet. Let's think about it. Let's talk about it, and let's see what we could do. It sounds interesting.
So God bless you. That sounds good.
Okay, you guys are in South Dakota, so you're 3 hours different than us?
No.
2 hours.
2 hours. Okay. Just so we know. Okay. So like John said, we should get together, you know, and put a time that's good for all of us and have kind of a meeting on that. And we can look at the website, you know, while we're talking on Skype. We like to use Skype, but, I mean, you can come in on your phone. But John,
We're on Skype. That's good.
Okay, so we can actually go peruse that website while we're talking, and that'll make things easier. Okay.
Oh,
thank you very
beautiful.
Much, guys.
God bless you guys.
Okay. Very good. Thanks a lot. Okay. If nothing else, I'm going to move to the next caller. Next caller, New Jersey Jason.
Hey, how you doing there?
Good.
My brother, good to be here. Everyone's doing really good work. Everyone's inspired. The fires are being lit, and we're smoking out the turkeys.
Well,
I just want to be just waiting on things to happen for myself. I'm doing really good here. The audacity of the state to neglect its responsibility makes me furious, but it makes me focus to know that we're working hard and knocking down the system with the papers being sent out. It is I coined it the Second Declaration of Independence, with the papers going out to the authority and power invested in them. And they are all in dishonor. Back to you.
I like to think of it as the death of a thousand cuts, because don't forget, there's lots of groups out there. We're not the only one pounding the doors down. I think we have the most powerful message. I mean, you know, just like any parent who's proud of his children, but nevertheless, I honestly think that we have the most fundamental and simple message, the tool that our forefathers gave us, which was the grand juries and jury nullification, and the people ruling on the people instead of the government ruling about what the government's doing, which we know Lysander Spooner, how he talks about that. So you're right, Jason. You know, the fact that we're all out there pounding the pavement, that's what's going to make the difference. And everybody needs to do that. Everybody needs to fight. And as you can hear, there's some horror stories out there. So the time is now. So you're right about that, Jason. I almost called you Jersey. Well, Jersey Jason, you are.
Well, I call myself Jersey Jason, Sunraven Liberty. And I've been calling myself Sunraven for years. But Liberty, Jersey City used to be called Libertyville. So I just took up the ville and just have a lot of liberty.
Right. Okay, well, we appreciate that, Jason. You have a good night, and thanks for your input.
I have been trying to touch out with Greg. We've been missing each other. I just sent him out a file. I sent it to Greg, National of the Alliance.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And we keep communicating that way. God bless the fight, and we have to be everyone. Remember, each one of us is part of the peg in the wheel, and the more pegs we have in the wheel, the stronger that momentum is. So don't think that you are, the little that you do is nothing. The little that you do is monumental, because the rest of us, who are 75% of our co-apatharians, don't do squat. So we are the one. We are the 99%ers.
Right, right.
God bless everyone's in their effort. Don't think you're ever alone when you're part of a good association. God bless right. everyone. And visit me on Shake and Wake Radio and Stone Soup on Mondays and Fridays at 2 to 4. I speak liberty if there's a challenge. Look, we want to hear from the people. And the more that we speak out against the beast, the more that he trembles. And the more that people are fearless, think for themselves, and do their own actions positively, you're a threat to the establishment. And you, they call you anti-government, but you are pro-constitutionalists. And God bless each one of you who put their time and sweat and effort in this movement. God bless you, Gerard and John and everyone else in the ranks, Eric. God bless everyone.
Okay.
Thank you,
Jason. Okay, moving right along, we got Greg from Florida. Go ahead, Greg. Greg from Florida. Looking for his mute button. Greg from Florida. I don't hear any snoring. You're unmuted, Greg. Going once, going twice. I have the next caller is Grace. I think Grace was in here once before, but I don't hear from Greg. I'm going to move along. Okay. Grace.
Hello. Hi, this is Kathy, actually.
Oh, you're coming in as Grace.
Nope, I'm Kathy Lester.
Okay. Kathy.
Oh, how are you guys?
Good.
Let me just say something here that I realize. We have a VOIP dialer coming in, and probably someone's been putting Grace next to the name, so every VOIP dialer that comes in as Grace, and that's probably the problem why we see so many Graces.
Yeah, it's actually strange, because when I go into the VIP dialer, it asks me to put my name, and I put Catherine Lester.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's
well, what
that's
happened
strange.
What happened is that we added the name Grace, so every time someone comes in on a VOIP, they're going to come in as Grace, because we've changed that. So what we need to do is actually remove those names.
Yeah, because at least that, you know, I don't know if Gina had a chance to tell you, but on our, not this Saturday, but our last Saturday call, we had a person on there that was really demonic, and using, you could tell he was using like a voice cover-up, and he was terrorizing Gina, he was terrorizing Sheila, and for the gods, they could not find who he was to block him. And every time one of us would try to talk, he's all, we're going to get you. You guys aren't going to go. It was just really evil. So I don't know if Sheila had an opportunity to tell you about that.
No, yeah, they did talk a little bit about it. But I think when that kind of thing happens, they got to go into the Q&A mode, or
yeah.
They have to deal with the person. If the person keeps coming in, because sometimes they figure a way to keep coming in, so then
yeah.
You have to just go to Q&A.
Well,
and the moment
that's
they start
their
childishness, you just hit the next button, and that's it. You know?
Yeah, that's what they eventually did, but Sheila was driving, so Gina was running it, and she couldn't figure out how to get to that. So I think they've probably ironed that out, but I just didn't know if you were aware of it.
So, John, is that coming in off the browser? Is that what this VOIP thing is, off our browser?
I think so.
The way that it works is what I do.
Yeah, the VOIP dialer, right?
I do it through my computer. In other words, I'm not using my phone.
Right, okay.
So
you're using the browser.
Exactly.
And you're coming onto our page to get that browser. You click
right.
on the browser, and it opens up a dialer,
well,
and then they dial in.
and it asked us to put your number.
Right.
And,
what happened was that Gary or somebody was putting Grace's name next to the dialer every time. And that, well, just once. That's all you have to do it is once. And once you change one, you change them all. So we lost them all, and that's what happened probably.
That's weird.
But, well, I think I just fixed it. So I deleted all the Graces that I could find, and hopefully the next meeting when people come in VOIP, we won't see that again.
Anybody that got put on hold because we thought we were being attacked, we apologize. We panicked.
Well, the sad thing about it was is that we could not do our call because he was just – He kept coming in. Finally, they got figured out how to do the Q&A, and he was gone, and we were successful with finishing the last half hour that we had to talk.
Well, if that's the worst they can do, then God bless us.
Exactly. You know. But the other reason I'm calling now is I wanted to get in with you, John, and. You know, I worked for the federal government. I also had dealt with this issue with my grandson where CPS made up things about me just to deny me placement. So I know how they work, and I know how other people work, especially people who don't want to see us succeed. They're going to say bad things. They're going to email us things. And the reason I bring that up is because now that my last visit with April or with Angel was April of last year, I promised him and I promised God that I would not let this go, that I would do whatever I could to be a part in bringing it down, because this is not how the court systems are supposed to work. And so in that, because I'm involved with, not per se personally involved with attorneys, but I'm in a lot of advocacy groups on Facebook, and one of our advocacy groups on Facebook was created and founded by an attorney down in Southern California who is being very successful in winning warrantless removal cases. And his theory is, well, there's nothing really that we can do but sue the shit out of him, and we're going to break the government. Well, I am not an attorney. I haven't had 4 years of college, but I think that's, if you guys can, in my eyes, that's a crock of crap, because we're never going to sue the government enough to make it stop. So in my eyes,
I respect the guy
because he has a lot of knowledge. He's a trial attorney, and he's winning them. But sadly,
here's the problem that he doesn't understand, and if he thought about it, he probably would, of course. And that is, when you sue the government, you're suing yourself. The government didn't do any harm to you. The government didn't do you no wrong. It's the people abusing their power in our government that has abused you. I never sue the government. I never sue the IRS. I never sue those people. I sue the people.
Well, what he did in these cases that I'm talking about, you guys could Google Sean McMillan in Southern California, and you'll read. I mean, he's been written up in so many articles. He's taught free civil rights classes to help other people do 1983 claims. And, you know, so in one respect, I see him doing a lot of good, but I don't buy his theory. And I was telling Gina and Sheila that when I really sat back and looked at that, you know, it was like another slap in the face, because his pocket's getting fat. He has two different planes. He owns a vineyard. I mean, he's getting wealthy off these lawsuits himself, because, of course, the attorney gets the majority of the money. And the other sad thing in these cases that he's winning is he's not getting the children back in the home. So as far as I'm concerned, that's a waste, you know. But on the other
side,
that's
the most important part of the case.
Exactly.
I mean, who cares about the money when you get your children? That's what you want first and foremost.
Right. Yeah. And what I told Gina and Sheila that I'm getting out of NLA is that if we are successful in this movement and the way that, you know, you guys are, how you're setting this up for us all to do it, if this works, it's going to put a lot of attorneys out of work. you know, because the people aren't going to be empowered. And then the second thing is that I started to do my civics course, but and I'm a highly educated woman. You know, I have my associate's degree and worked for the feds for 12 years and then attorneys for civil litigation for 2 years, registered process server for 8, and over 30 years of customer quality service. But there's haters, you know. So what I wanted to bring up is I got an email from one of his cronies in his group because I shared it. I shared our NLA on their page in hopes to get other people on board. And so suddenly I got a private message. We do not support NLA, and we don't think that he's making any move, meaning John Durash. And then this woman said, I would really appreciate that you do your research, Kathy. And she shared me this link on Google. Well, on this Google link, and I shared it with Gina because Gina, I know, has more ability to get in touch with you directly, John. And I only did it to her because I wanted it squashed. And basically, there's some guy on there that is talking all this stuff and that he's had these interactions with you and that essentially you and the NLA are an entire fraud. Now, I'm not doing this to cause disarray in this group. I'm doing it to let you know what's going on behind the scenes,
yeah,
and I want you to be aware of
it.
Okay, so you're
aware
of it.
There's a group of lawyers called FOGBO that are doing a lot of this stuff. I'm sure there's other groups. They're very immature individuals, and
mm-hmm.
they're liars. And, of course,
mm-hmm.
anything they say is, of course, all hearsay. They make this stuff up.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if half of what they were saying was true, I should be in jail, ultimately.
Amen.
But nevertheless,
and the point I made with Gina, too, was that, you know, just like, I mean, a perfect example is in my case with my grandson. I did nothing wrong. I had tough love, my daughter. She wasn't even in my home, okay? But they could go and make up the stuff to make me look like this horrible person in order to deny me placement. And that's kind of what I've seen in it, in what there's three different groups of three different men that are essentially dogging your name. And
yeah.
what I thought to myself... was they're essentially doing the same thing CPS does to people. They don't even know you, but they want to go make up these stories. And yeah, you know, we're going to have adversaries, and some of those people, we just need to ignore it. But what I suggested to Gina was, you know, I don't know how much power you want to give to it, but I just thought maybe it would be a good idea to put a little clause in there. You know, we are aware that there's some, you know, bogus information going around, and we just want you to know we're aware of it. And it is not true, and our mission is what we've always said it is, and that is to take back control of our justice system and our constitutional and civil rights.
Amen. Bring justice back into the courtrooms. Ultimately, bring God back into the courtrooms.
Exactly.
And,
but I didn't know if you wanted to give it any power because...
Well, look, the proof is in the pudding. People say all kinds of terrible things, and ultimately you can't please everyone. You know that old song, you can't please everyone.
Amen.
You might as well please yourself, and in my opinion, I try to please the Lord, so that's that.
And,
but the bottom line is this, is the enemy can't refute us. They can't, they have no, there's nothing they can say, so the only thing they could do is destroy the messenger. That's a thousands of years old, that ploy. They've been doing that forever.
Exactly.
They destroy the people. Look
exactly.
at what Jesus Christ himself, when God Almighty came down into the world in the person of Jesus, and he was on this planet, and the scribes or the Pharisees, they said he came in the name of Beelzebub, and they called him
exactly.
the devil.
Exactly, yeah,
so, I mean, that's my goodness. I mean, look at
well,
the, you know,
and that's kind of how I stand, John. I just wanted to bring it out so that you know, and I felt a little more comfortable, because on the victim side of it, what... And only because I've dealt with it and I'm a smart person, I know where your guys' heart is. You guys are on these calls you know, every Monday night. It's, I know you're not getting paid for it. You know, this is something you guys are all doing on your own time. So there's definitely heart, passion, and truth involved in it. That's the way
well,
I
exactly.
See.
We're one of the very few places you can go to any group or any organization where a couple of the founders are available once a week for 3 hours to answer any question. And we run away from nothing. We'll answer any question anybody
yeah.
has.
Yeah, and I have seen nothing but an open book from all of you guys, you know. And I just wanted to let you know, I guess, because, you know.
Well, we appreciate that. You have a background in law here, right? You were telling us all these different things. You were in the legal arena, so to speak.
Well, I worked for civil litigation attorneys and real estate, in other words, evictions and stuff like that. But I also have an associate's degree in legal terminology. So,
well, would
you, know,
you,
like
would
I did
you
my
be interested in working with the investigative team?
Anybody. And that's what I told Gina, and she said she was going to get a call in with you because I, you know, I'm at this point after what they did to me. Well, it was when my last visit was with my grandson. I wouldn't say a nervous breakdown, but I got to where I just couldn't handle any emotion. And I worked for Social Security for 12 years.
They are taking the most holy thing to mankind is their children. I mean, look at, you know.
It was my grandchild.
Well, same thing. It's your children.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
You're willing to step up, I believe, to take care of the child because I perceive there's a problem with the parents, the child's
parents. They're both on heroin.
Okay, so you're willing to step up and take care of the child, which is your unalienable right, ultimately, because God gave that child to your daughter or your son, your
yeah.
daughter, I believe, right? Gave that
yeah.
child to your daughter. When your daughter couldn't fulfill the needs of that child, there mm-hmm. is the extended family. And when grandma or grandpa picks up or
exactly.
uncle picks up and says, I'm going to take care of that child because that's what I have to do,
right.
that's their right. That's
right.
That child is their family.
Right.
They're not the family of the government. They're not the
yeah.
family of that court, the system, or whatever's
going
on there.
But see, that's the whole weird thing. The CPS court is like a
secret
court.
Oh, yeah.
They wouldn't even allow me into the courtroom. I've been in courtrooms. I can walk into a murder case and be Joe Blow, and they don't even question you. You
right.
go in, you sit down, you watch, no big deal.
I'm going to say something. I said this live before. I'll say it again. I truly believe this, that we're going to get these people's children back. You're going to get your granddaughter back, your grandson or granddaughter?
Grandson, Angel.
Okay,
Angel is
grandson.
The
we're going to get
yeah.
them back, and I'll tell you why we're going to get them back. Because they have done nothing, absolutely nothing. I've been in enough of these courts. I've heard enough of these court stories. They act. There is no affidavits. There's no paperwork. There's no evidence that's hardcore. Nothing in any of those courts.
No,
so
I
process.
I didn't even have the right to go in there and say, those social workers lied to you, Your Honor.
Right. Exactly.
They lied to you. This is
but it doesn't
thing.
Matter. But his honor or her honor has no business hearing a case without a sworn affidavit, and that's the problem here.
Right,
now,
right.
that being the case said and done, that's where the power of the habeas corpus comes in.
Yeah.
They cannot answer a habeas corpus. That's why I know people are going to get their children back.
Right.
Habeas corpus, and then they'll win their children back, we'll shut down their case, and then we'll move towards the monetary value that's necessary to follow up on this.
Amen. Because that was the thing that blew me away as a person before. Not that I'm perfect in any way, none of us are, but as a public servant for 12 years, federal, and the agency I worked for, they were very strict on how we delivered customer quality, and that essentially we didn't work for the government, we worked for the people. So I have to give Social Security kudos for that. You won't hear that much out of a government entity. But I worked in a teleservice center that had 400 of us operators. Each one of us was monitored 3 times a month, where our supervisor listened into our call to make sure we were delivering quality customer service for very sick people. You know, it wasn't an easy job. I had calls where the guy was threatening to kill himself, had the gun to his head. I had to call federal agents because we were national, you know. And when I worked there, I took it to heart. It was just like if I was a lawyer and I represented my client. That's what else I'm seeing with all these public defenders. My daughter had a public defender. The father had a public defender. My grandson had a public defender. Did any of them ever once call me and say, Kathy, let me get you in here and have a talk because this is what they said, and your daughter and son-in-law said they want him placed with you. Is this true? And I would have, of course, said no. Everything they said is a lie, and then they should have objected at the jurisdiction hearing. No, they didn't even want nothing to do with me, and that's in the best interest of my grandson. He was a month and a half old when they took him. His attorney, it was his duty to represent the best interest of him, which is to be placed with the family.
Right. His duty ultimately for him, and it's come their duty, is to make money, and that's unfortunate, but that's the truth.
It's
the
horrible.
Ugly truth.
So in all of this, when I got into that, because I used to be one that thought, if I see a kid being abused, I'm going to call CPS. Well, I tell you what, they will be the last freaking people I'll call.
That's right. Well, we got to get rid of them.
If I have to, I'll go take the law in my own hands, or I will, call the police first. But the police nowadays, that's who they call. They call CPS.
Right. Well, look it. Once we get into the courts, start to do what we have to do, and the grand juries start to get going, the common law grand juries, we got to revamp that whole family court system.
It's just a
nightmare. First of all, there should be no such thing as a family court. There's family services, but family services is arbitrational, and it should be covered by people outside of the government where there is no political connections, no
Amen.
Money strings, nothing
Amen.
Attached.
Well, no,
people
no,
have just said
no
arbitrated situation.
Yeah, because that's the other thing, because I still advocate. Now, I help other families that are going through it because I know what, you know, appeals they can file. I can teach them how to correct the record. I can teach them to create affidavits. And
well, look,
usually,
if you got the time, consider talking with Greg and get connecting with him. I know you work.
Who's Greg?
Greg is he's the director for the investigative and research committee, and we're doing the. He's working on the habeas corpuses. We're teaching him how to do that. And we can use someone with a legal background like you to really, because I think you can grasp it a lot quicker, and then because we have to teach as many people as possible how to do this.
You know, and the thing to keep in mind is I'm a visual learner. In other words, if I've seen a habeas corpus, one,
uh-huh.
and
right.
it wasn't too long because I'll be learning, I can go off those. I can just,
right.
in other words,
yeah, I'm the same way. I was able to pick it up very quickly. But
yeah.
And the key thing to the whole thing is understand the jurisdiction and the position from which you are coming from.
Amen.
When you understand that, if you've got that kind of ability
that
to
concept,
pick up and
yeah.
run off
yeah.
quickly the framework, then you got it and it's done.
Yeah.
So I perceive you have that ability.
I do.
And having that ability might help us, that group out, working with that group to give the rest of them that ability. And there are two frameworks I put together, one from the state, one from the federal. Now, we actually have a federal habeas corpus done. We're working on a state habeas corpus, so there'll be two beautiful examples, plus the two, you know, framework examples I gave. All that, I think, would be enough for someone with your background to be able to run with it very quickly.
Certainly. And the federal habeas corpus that you guys already filed, are all our names on that one, or was that for a different issue?
That was to remove someone out of jail in Utah.
Okay.
We're ready. We have not. I'm looking to try to figure out when we're going to go forward with the CPS movement. And we've got to do something. But, of course, the paperwork has to come in.
Exactly.
And the people have to tell me, Gina and the group's got to get together at some point and say, let's start moving on this.
Well,
and once you have a certain amount of paperwork, we can start moving on it.
Yeah, just so you know, because I don't know when's the last time you spoke to Gina, but our when we ended our last, because I didn't make last night's Sunday call, unfortunately, but the Sunday prior, what her, Sheila, and I had decided is we had to put some kind of a deadline on getting all these CPS people to do, you know, that affidavit and all that. So what Gina pretty much did is said, I'm right now telling you that the deadline is by the end of May.
Okay.
So
right, well, that's coming up very quickly. It's only 10 days away.
Yes.
Let me say, I know I don't pronounce this well, and I'm trying to remember. Sitorari, you know what I'm talking about with the where a court commands another court to turn over all of the paperwork?
I don't know what one is, but I heard you guys talking about
okay.
it.
Yeah,
I
remember the name of it, but there we have to do a generic one. And we also, there's another paper, there's two forms we have to create that will be generic. The other one, of course, will be the habeas corpus. So we have to do two of them. And if you could work with me on that, I'll create it and set the thing. And if you could start running through to get the paperwork going as you're going along. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much time you have, but we also have the habeas corpuses that are going on the other side of things with Greg.
Yeah.
Are you working full-time still, or are you retired?
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Because I had brain surgery in 07. I had a pituitary tumor. It's not cancer, but it came back. I've got pinched nerve in my neck and my back, but I was still working. But when my final visit was with Angel, and I lost at the appellate court because I did all my own briefs. I did my original brief and my reply brief all on my own because there was no one that would help me. I couldn't find an attorney that would help a grandparent. It was just heart-wrenching. So
yeah, they never get it.
So I immediately went into it. I filed everything. I can send you copies of that in a PDF file. But yes, definitely, John. That I could do that once you, start it. Send me an example. And what it
all
right, is
well,
now,
we'll get
what
together.
It is now is I'm federally retired with what's called PTSD, because when the thing went down with my grandson and me seeing the corruption, because I never knew that this was going on. And it just so set me back mentally and emotionally, and also because of my integrity as a public servant, that these other public servants of the state that take an oath to tell the truth created a lie against me. It devastated me. So I went out and I am considered a post-traumatic stress disorder and federally retired. So I'm here at home all the time. And the majority of my time I spend on Facebook helping people that just get new cases, telling them,
Let's do this. You've got my phone number. Next time, Gina should be talking to me tomorrow. We'll try to pull you in. If you're on Skype, if you're not on Skype, get on Skype.
I do have Skype.
Let's be connected. Come to tomorrow's meeting with Gina and myself. Let's talk a little bit there. We'll talk about some of this paperwork. I don't want to pull you away from Gina because we really do need you over there to do paperwork there.
Yeah.
But I don't want to pull you over to the other side with Greg, but I think if you handle the paperwork as an in-between between that committee with Greg and myself, and you working with them a little bit until they learn better, because you could maybe spend more time with them than I can.
Amen.
And eventually, they will be able to do this all on their own. I think they're very close to it anyway.
Yeah.
I know Greg is really rolled up his sleeve, and he's really paying attention. We have John.
Well, the crazy thing is I was on that Lawless America movement when it first started, and I remembered Sheila's voice, so when I had my call with her last week, I said, your voice is so familiar. Were you on the Lawless movement? And she said, yes. Well, he just got out of jail, so I know he's back in the swing of it, too. And that was what that one person was saying in that Google thing, is that you were just trying to start off from where Bill Windsor left off.
I don't know anything about any of those movements. We created everything we got from scratch. We did our own research.
I heard
that other people have tried what we're doing, but nobody has done it on the level or from the grassroots level, because we're all about grassroots. You've got to get the power into the county.
Yes.
And that's where the real authority is.
The whole Lawless America was all he was doing was traveling across the United States. And he was stopping in every town, and he was putting court crimes or crime scene tapes around the courts. I mean, this man did a lot of huge stuff, but all his goal was to get a congressional testimony up to D.C. And then what happened is he got too personal with some of his friends or some of the people in the movement and kept the professionalism out of it and let it get personal. Well, he ended up, you know, going to dinner to certain people's houses. Well, some of those people turned on him and ended up suing him. So that's all that, how all that went crazy. But anyways, I am a multitasker. And
all right, well, look, let's talk tomorrow. I want to move on because we've been on a long time. But
yeah.
I kept you on because there's a lot of good stuff here, and I see a lot of opportunity to help us with paperwork and so on, and also to answer some questions generally anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, give me a call. Get in touch with Gina, or Gina's listening, and I'm sure right now also.
Yeah.
Get in touch with you, and you guys together call me tomorrow. Let's get a dialogue going. Let's get some paperwork going. And let's see how you may be able to help the other team over there, the committee for the investigative group, particularly for writing habeas corpuses. And again, look, it is a framework, you know, it's a generic piece of framework, really, we put together. And we've learned most of it from Bill Thornton.
Yeah.
But we put our own stuff into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be very quick and very easy, and I think you'll be able to help teach others quickly and easy.
Yeah. And
so with that, we should move on, okay? What was your first name again?
Catherine Lester.
Catherine, okay.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot about Bill Thornton. I also believe he has templates, which are really easy to use.
Yes, he does.
Okay. And so lastly, how am I going to know what time to call you, John?
Oh, well, get in touch with what time zone you want.
I'm Pacific Standard, California.
Okay, so I'm 3 hours different from you.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, you can call me tomorrow afternoon my time, which would be maybe 10, 11 your time or something like that. Get a hold of Gina. I'll talk to Gina and get a hold of Gina. You two guys should get together with me maybe tomorrow, and we'll take it from there. And you and I should open up a dialogue communication so that we can transfer papers.
Okay, John. And is it the number that's on the NLA site for you?
845-233-6560.
Okay, guys. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Sorry to take up so much time from others.
I'm sorry, too. I'm sorry. I just had a lot of questions. Can I ask one more? I started a new civics course, and my God, I couldn't answer any of the questions. Is there a place I can study for it before I start trying to take the test?
Well, look, the key thing is when you're taking the test, there's the key up there, you know, so the answers are already there in a key, so you just have to choose the answer. And if you get them wrong, you can take some guesses, but the key thing, of course, is to research out the answers. We're not expecting anybody to remember all that stuff, but it's becoming familiar. Look, at anything that you learn, it's really becoming familiar with something and spending a lot of time with it. And the more time you spend with it, all of a sudden it starts to spill out of your mouth and you wonder, where did this come from, you know?
Uh-huh,
but it's because you've been, you know, putting your time into it. So that's all the civics course is.
Okay.
So, and so, look, you can listen through the things very carefully. You should be able to take the questions, and you should be able to read through something. It's mostly listening, and you can have the questions in mind while you're listening. But again,
I haven't found
to keep it easy, too.
I haven't found anything that I can listen. Where I went is it just started asking me questions, and I don't know anything about it.
Oh, no, there's a... there's an MP3 or video right there on the same page.
Oh, okay. Well, then I missed that. Okay,
yes,
perfect.
Videos and MP3s. You click the button, you listen, or you watch, and then you answer the questions.
Okay, perfect, you guys. I'm sorry to take all your
time. And if you keep the questions in mind, you'll be picking them up as you go, and all of that, it works together for you to have experience with it, and you'll pick it up. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, and on the last note, I did also tell Gina, I'm in Northern California, and whenever we get the ball rolling and we get a little further ahead, I'm willing to be a court administrator in my county.
Well, there you go. Just join up. You click the button when you join the course, administrator?
Yes.
Okay, so then you're on the list for it.
Okay.
And you should be able to take that role in your county when you're done and the position opens up.
And I could even go, like, to San Jose. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we got to move on. We'll talk tomorrow, okay? We went beyond our time, but we'll go for one more call. Gerard, take one more call, and then we'll have to close down because it's getting late, and I apologize that we can't get to everybody, but go ahead.
Okay. This is unknown 7036. You are unmuted. 7036. You're unmuted. Going once. Going twice. Can you hear me, John? Because I got knocked off twice. I just dodged.
I can hear you. I guess the third time you'll go over to Ed, Connecticut Ed.
Okay. Going three times. We're gone. Ed, Connecticut Ed, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Yeah, perfect timing. This will be the shortest one. I just wanted to thank you, Gerard, and John, for what you're doing. As the people are devastated, and we need you and National Liberty Alliance.
Well,
we need your parents back in Connecticut. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Okay. Have a good night. Thanks for that, Ed.
Okay. God bless.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, I think with that, we're going to end it. Sorry we couldn't get to everybody. Maybe next week, people in the queue right now, try to be the first ones up in the queue. We'll hold everybody else off and let those who didn't get on to get first, and we'll take it from there. But with that, thank you, everybody, for coming. We'll be back next Monday, and we'll pick up on the next thing. We'll keep people informed of what's going on, and we'll report on the paperwork that we're filing again. And also, you know, we have held up on Bible studies the last three or so weeks, and hopefully soon we'll get back to that. Right now, I just can't put the time into studies and to catch up on that right now. But we'll get that going back again soon. That's on Saturdays at 7. But with that, we're going to end it. Again, thanks for coming. God bless you. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday.
Have a good time.